Blog Talk Radio.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black, tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me. Found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
About the despicable video that caused the Benghazi massacre, who used the IRS as a weapon to go after their political enemies, the ones who chip away at our First, Second, and Fourth Amendment rights, only to turn around and trumpet their right to hide behind the Fifth Amendment. The latest to come out of the Obama administration? Just a little slap at Syria. Really, Mr. President? Now you want the American people, after all they've been through, to take you at your word and blindly follow you into yet another Middle East conflict? Hello and welcome to Justice. I'm Judge Jeanine Pirro. Thanks for being with us tonight. This week, the Obama administration seeks congressional approval to strike Syria. The narrative? We go in for just a couple of days, do a quick military slap, no intention of regime change, and then call it a day. We'll show them. But right now, Russian and American destroyers and an untold number of submarines are lining up off the Syrian coast. Iranian fast boats are already in the Persian Gulf, where other American warships are positioned. And since we've given them fair warning, Mr. President, because of your latest indecision and dithering, our enemies in the Middle East have been moving assets and preparing to retaliate. It's teed up. Once we start the bombing, the Syrians will call on their allies, Iran and Russia. Now, let me see if I understand this. We're looking to bomb Syria because of an alleged chemical attack, risking a potential face-off with Iran and Russia in a move that will ultimately benefit who? Al-Qaeda? Mr. President, why for 2 years did the United States and the world stand silent as the civil war unfolded in Syria? Well over 100,000 casualties, women and children, victims of bombings and shootings, missile attacks, executions, dismemberment, and decapitation. Now, 1,400 of the over 100,000 are believed to be victims of chemical weapons. Now, we need to engage in a dust-up with Syria? Mr. President, why is killing one way more heinous and worthy of our response than another? And why now? And what about Israel? We know you don't like Bibi, but hell, don't you have an obligation to not put our allies in harm's way? And your reason?
I didn't set a red line. The world set a red line. Congress set a red line when it ratified that treaty. My credibility is not on the line. The international community's credibility is on the line.
That's just not true. It's another one of your false narratives.
A red line for us is we start seeing a whole bunch of chemical weapons moving around or being utilized. That would change my calculus. That would change my equation.
A lie is a lie is a lie. You said it, the world heard it, and the world heard you say it. Syria heard you say it, and they gave you no mind, and they did it anyway. And by the way, if you didn't draw a red line, why are we going in? No one respects us. No one fears us. You've done this to us. Why draw red lines when everyone knows that your red lines are nothing more than green lights over and over again? But I got to give you one. You're right. Your credibility is not on the line. With all due respect, Mr. President, you have no credibility. To be credible, one must be clear and constant. Your actions must be swift and certain. You lost credibility when you left Americans on that rooftop in Benghazi, but fired up Air Force One to go to your Las Vegas fundraiser. That was a clear signal to the world that it's open season on Americans, even including an ambassador. And by the way, whatever happened to, we're going to bring them to justice. It's been a year. Where's the justice? And now you want to hide behind Congress so you can blame them for your inaction. Or you say maybe you'll go in anyway. What's that all about? It's amateur hour in Washington.
Red skies, red lines, and red rhinos. You are about to enter the Thunderdome, and it is time to give the Red Rhinos, like little Johnny Crying Tan Boehner and Eric Cantnot, a red card. Get them out of the game. They're taking a dive for Obama. Syria's still on the table, and things can go south real quick. But don't be distracted. We've got problems right here in the Imperial City to deal with. Continuing resolution, Obamacare, debt limit, the Fed, the IRS, politicizing the FBI, Benghazi, and a constellation of scandals. Obama is a known quantity, by now even to the most ignorant or raptured. But the real problem in the Imperial City is the red rhinos, and we're drawing a red line. Hey, GOP, no more rhinos. No more green lights on Obama's Marxist jihadi red lines. You are live with Tex and Rex, irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex, broadcasting to you from the Imperial City.
And this is Tex, broadcasting from deep in the heart of Texas, as always. What's on the agenda tonight, Rex?
Well, it looks like this Syria thing, got delayed, principally because there's this obstacle Obama had to deal with called the U.S. Constitution, and so he decided to inform Congress that he was going to war when he actually has to ask their permission, and couldn't get the votes in the House to make it happen. So, you know, they dithered back and forth, and then Vladimir Putin comes flying in with a diplomatic opportunity handed to him on a silver platter by bungling buffoon John Frankenstein Kerry. And it seems that now we're pursuing.
That was the second obstacle in his path That was the second obstacle in his path, was his own Secretary of State.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody saw that one coming. Even John Kerry didn't see that one coming. He's like saying these words. He's like, oh, God, I'm talking. Words are coming out of my mouth. What did I just propose?
Yeah.
That was,
well,
you know,
he was thinking out loud.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, don't do that. Stay on the teleprompter, Mr. Kerry. Stay on the teleprompter. Talking points. It's a very orchestrated effort. But yeah, I mean, basically, they handed Putin this diplomatic victory, making him look like the sane, cool, level-headed adult on the world stage, and basically making us look weak, although I'd argue that the United States doesn't look weak. It's just Obama and Kerry who look weak. It looks like our Congress actually grew a pair of balls. Probably because 2014 is coming up. But so it seems like we're delayed now in pursuing diplomatic solutions, but you know how these things go. I mean, shit could go south overnight. You could have an actual attack. You could have a false flag attack. You could have a breakdown in negotiations. There could be rumors that the chemical weapons that probably came from Iraq into Syria are now on their way to Iran. So, you know, the war is not off the table, people, and you need to still keep telling your congresspeople no war in Syria.
I mean, the strange thing about that question, right, so he's in London, standing next to, I believe, William Hague, the foreign minister for the UK, and he's got this hour-long rambling press conference where he's trying to win over British support for a strike, right? And so someone asked him, like, well, is there anything that Syria could do to avoid a strike? And the stupid thing is, he didn't have an answer. I mean, they did. It's like it's not even in his brief. You know what I'm saying? Like they didn't even.
Well, because they didn't have a reason to go there in the first place.
Yeah. Well, why are we striking Syria again? Exactly. They don't really have an answer for that one. So I guess it doesn't make sense that they have an answer for what could Syria do to avoid it. You know, they're like, well, we don't really want to strike, but we sort of have to because everybody else is, you know, wants us to. So I guess we're going to. But they didn't have a pre-prepped answer. So he ad-libbed this horrible, bullshitty response, right, where he says, you know, and I don't have the direct quote in front of me, but essentially he's like, oh, yes, they could turn over chemical weapons to the international community. Okay, well, I got a question. What the hell is the international community? Oh, okay, well, turn it over to the neighborhood watch. Who are we turning things over to, right? To the international community within a week, right? So let me just go ahead. He's like, since I'm making stuff up, oh, crap, I need to make this impossible for them to meet. So I'm going to say within a week. And then all of it, every single bit, right, which can't be done within a week, and then maybe, you know, we might not strike you, right? And he's like, oh, shoot, dodge that bullet. That'll take care of that crap. They're not going to turn their chemical weapons over every single bit of it within a week. That can't be done. And so we can still strike him. Well, you know, the Russians, they seize upon that. And now they can bog you down forever and, you know, these arms negotiations talks and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, from my perspective, who cares? Because I don't care if we strike Syria or not, because I'm still not convinced that Assad or Assad's side or forces are the ones who use chemical weapons. I think it's just as likely, if not more likely, that the rebels of the opposition did, or perhaps the al-Qaeda forces over there did to draw the United States in, or God only knows. There's so many people who want to draw us into that conflict that trying to sort out who would use them is going to be difficult. And I think one of the last people who wants to draw us into that conflict would be Bashar Assad. So I still maintain I don't think he used them, even though all conversations on the news are about how, you know, they think that this he did this, and they just start from the starting point, well, Assad used chemical weapons, you know. I just don't think so. And they've already started this other BS narrative, which is, well, even if he didn't order it, some rogue element of his military did, which just goes to show command and control has broken down, and so we have to remove Assad from power because he's lost
that
control.
Makes sense.
Well, what is it? Yeah, no
that makes
what
sense.
It is.
The guy who's in – the authoritarian dictator who's in charge is losing control of some of his generals, so what we need to do is take him out so that we'll have even more of a chaotic situation because that'll be stable.
Yeah, exactly. Well – we'll replace this autocratic dictator with absolute control over his military forces, all of whom are Alawites, right, which is the British set that system up because the Alawites are a minority within Syria, and so they always need help from the outside with the idea. Otherwise, you know, the local population would turn against them. So now what we need to do is get rid of them because discipline's broken down, and turn it over to all these, you know, insane rebel groups running around with various agendas. There's so many of them, they, you know, we barely even know who all of them are, and that's somehow going to be safer. I got an idea. If you think it's a rogue general, why don't you get rid of that rogue general? You know? So
yeah.
What they're doing now is they're saying that Dr. Strangelove is alive and well in the Syrian military.
Dr. Strangelove is a more plausible reality than the reality that we're in. I mean,
yeah.
You can't make this shit up, Tex. It's literally insane. And the thing that's fascinating to me is that we really have no skin in this game. We have no dog in this fight. Now they're giving us this meme that, well, you know, chemical weapons are used. They could be used anywhere else in the world, so we have to go in. There's chemical weapons in Libya that are still being destroyed. There's chemical weapons in Iraq that are still being destroyed. We've been trying to destroy our chemical weapons for nearly 40 years, spent $35 billion, and we haven't destroyed all of them. So don't give me this crap. They're out there. They should be destroyed. It's a horrible weapon to use. But frankly, whether you kill somebody with a tomahawk, a knife, cut out their organ and heart and eat it, blow them up because you put a vest on and walked into a cafe, stab them, run them over with your car, or gas them, the person's still dead. So the response should be, why are these alleged 1,400 dead people who are allegedly gassed by somebody we don't know more important than the 99,500 that were killed prior and we did nothing other than possibly arm those who were doing the killing? It's nuts.
Well,
I keep hearing, you know, Assad killed 100,000. Well, if it's a civil war, these are in fact rebels, and we know that at least a third of them are Al-Qaeda foreign jihadi fighters. But let's just say that they're rebels, right? And it's a civil war. Why is Assad so effective that he's the only one killing people? I mean, isn't the other side
exactly
getting any victories?
Well, yeah, and then they're talking about, oh, we know it was Assad because this chemical attack happened along this road that goes near the airport, and Assad needs access to that airport in order to get his supplies in. Okay, well, so we know this road near the airport is now strategic. Well, maybe the rebels were getting their asses kicked, and they thought, hey, if we could get these people off this road, you know, we could probably shut down Assad, so let's just gas a whole bunch of these people. I mean, it's just as likely, right? There's no evidence
yeah
to suggest one side over the other. All they said is, oh, it's real strategic. That's why, you know, Assad would use chemical weapons. Well, I don't think Assad would use chemical weapons if he knows the United States is going to get involved. I think someone else used them. You know, now,
well,
I don't
exactly
have to that, but nobody seems interested in investigating one way or another. They're just like, okay, that's it. Now we have to get involved. And I didn't draw a red line. The world drew a red line. The world's turning around like, whoa,
yeah,
what? Huh? What,
it's everybody's fault but mine.
Bobby? Yeah.
It's everybody's fault but mine. I didn't do anything. But here's the thing, and Judge Jeanine in that opening clip we played, played the clip. He clearly said it, and then he backed away from it. Because remember that when he said the red line thing, he was campaigning, and he wanted to seem strong, right? And then and now he's like, well, you know, I didn't draw the red line. If we go to war here, it's because I'm the reluctant Nobel Peace Prize warmonger. I'm not really I don't really have a hard-on for war. And I mean, compared to like Peter King and Lindsey Graham and John McCain, he doesn't have a hard-on for war, but he certainly got us into more wars than George Bush, and everybody thought he was like the biggest warmonger since Hitler. So, you know, people are nuts. But if it is a strategic road and Assad needs it, why would he use chemical weapons? There's residue and leftover, and there'd be danger to his own soldiers. I mean, the thing is that we don't have evidence one way or the other yet. But what we do have is reason. We know that Assad is a rational man. He's an intelligent man. He's a sober man. Is he an authoritarian dictator? Is he a cuddly, you know, protector of minorities and Christians? I don't really care. I just know that he's not insane. He's an ophthalmologist. He's intelligent. He's sober, level-headed. It doesn't make any logical, rational sense for him to do this. There's nothing for him by which to gain. You always ask the question, qui bono, who benefits? And in this equation, Assad doesn't benefit anything. Which leads us to the other conclusion, what's the benefit of us causing these, you know, tomahawk strikes and taking out his air capability? Well, you're not going to do anything about the chemical weapons by doing that. You're not going to replace Assad if he's such a bad guy and you want to get rid of him. We're not going to do that. All we're going to do is degrade his air capability, which is the only advantage that he has over Al-Qaeda, Jabhat al-Nusra, all the jihadi groups and quote, whatever might be left of the Free Syrian Army. So we're just basically making sure that the conflict is prolonged and more people die. Qui bono, that doesn't benefit the United States. Yet you've got this cadre of neocon warmongering Republicans that are basically pushing Obama into war. And of course, you know, he was ready to go it alone because whoever he works for, whether it's the Saudis or the banksters or whoever has an interest in creating this conflict, he was going in that direction. And the question you have to ask yourself is, if it's not constitutional, it hasn't been authorized by Congress, at least 70% of your country, possibly 90%, doesn't want to do it. Then you got to back away. And that's what they did. Putin handed them the way out. And now they're trying to spin it and say that the only reason that Assad decided to give up his chemical weapons is because of the threat of force. Give me a break. That had nothing to do with it. That's just you trying to look good, Mr. Obama. You're trying to spin it that you had some kind of masterful plan all along. You got played by Vladimir Putin, period. End of story. You look weak. You got egg on your face. The real problem, though, is we've talked about this a million times. Obama is just a tool, and he's a temporary commander in chief, and he's a puppet, and he's not a progressive, and he's not a hopey, changey guy. But the real problem is the damn Republicans, right, Tex?
Well, absolutely. But I just want to point something out about the foreign policy team here. Okay, so we fell ass backwards into war because Obama said some bullshit thing that he probably didn't really believe himself back last. August of 2012, I believe, is when he first said it, that it'd be a red line if chemical weapons were used, right? Or if we see a lot of chemical weapons moving around the country, right, and are used, right? Okay, so he says that, but I don't think there was any kind of big strategy behind that. He was just trying to look tough, right? So there's no strategy leading up to him drawing this red line. Okay, then all of a sudden the red line's crossed. He's like, oh, God, you got to be kidding me. We have to do something about this. We're like, oh, yes, now we're standing up for international principle, the Chemical Weapons Convention, blah, blah, blah. You know, all these, we have to do something about this. Why do we have to do something about it? Why doesn't Russia do something about it? You know, back in the Cold War, we disciplined the people on our side, and Russia disciplined the people on their side, and Syria is on their side or is in their sphere of influence, has been during the Cold War. So why don't we go to the Russians and tell them, hey, you got to do something about this. You signed the Chemical Weapons Convention. You know, what the hell are you doing about the thing, right? Then, so they blunder into, oh, great, now we have to strike, right, because essentially our allies want us to, or our allies in the Middle East want us to anyway, use us as mercenaries in their war. And then, being once again completely unprepared with this amateurish foreign policy team, we fall ass backwards out of war, and believe me, I think John Kerry got a very stern talking to about all this. Ass backwards out of war because the guy says something off the cuff, right? Blah, blah, I don't know, I'm going to make ad lib this answer, and oh, shoot. And then he ends the whole thing with, and we know that there's no way he's going to do that, so it's impossible, right? So he just goes ahead and shuts the door on that whole thing, right? And the State Department's like,
as your governor would say, Tex, oops.
Exactly, oops. And the State Department, you know, they're out there, that was a rhetorical argument, that wasn't a proposal, all this kind of stuff. And then the Russians seize on the proposal because they know they can bog this thing down. They keep their ally alive, right, Assad. They keep him alive. They seize on this thing. They wrap us up in this diplomatic bullshit process that we never had any intention of becoming involved in. Now we're stuck in the thing. And this should be frightening to you. If this is what U.S. foreign policy has become, where we have a president out there drawing red lines, but then he disavows that he ever drew and it was a world red line, I doubt that David Cameron sitting around saying, yes, I did draw this red line. This is a challenge to me. You know, or Holland is saying the same thing, or China's like, oh, my God, you know, what are we going to do about this red line that we all have collectively drawn? Like, no, your ass is out in the breeze. You're on your own. Don't drag me into your own mess. I mean, these people look like idiots and fools, and here we are, the world's greatest superpower. I mean, you're reaching the point where the whole world is looking at the United States and laughing, and that, my friends, is going to be dangerous. The world order, because all these conflicts are going to start coming out of the woodworks, and we're still with the mindset that we have to intervene everywhere, and everybody's like, I don't think the United States knows what it's doing anymore, because you know what, the current foreign policy team doesn't know what it's doing. And then after all this happens, Putin writes this stupid little op-ed piece that I guess is supposed to persuade Congress or whatever it's supposed to do.
Who knows? It was written by a PR firm here in D.C. for the most part.
Exactly.
I mean, it had some valid points, but it was a snarky thing.
Yeah. And, I mean, obviously Putin didn't write it. He sit down, put pen to paper, just put his name on the thing. But, you know, it's this poorly aimed piece of propaganda trying to win support and all this kind of stuff. I mean, it's so poorly aimed that it's almost intentionally bad, I think. But then we have someone from the White House. I mean, never mind the idiocy of that, right? But then we have someone from the White House the next day stating on, I believe it was MSNBC, stating that, oh, well, we're so glad that Putin wrote this this op-ed, because now Putin owns Syria. He owns the conflict in Syria, because now he stepped in. He's great, you moron. This is their ally for forever. You were about to topple their guy, and now you, representing the White House, have just told Putin that in your mind, in the mind of the United States, the people running the White House, Putin owns Syria and the Syrian conflict, and he will be dictating terms to us as to what goes on there. I really don't think I've ever seen incompetence this great in the United States ever. I mean, I think this is the most incompetent foreign policy team I've seen in my entire life. And I think,
of course,
you know, it's kept us out of war in Syria thus far. And, you know, thank God for that, because I don't think there's anything to be gained by going over there. I think it will continue to keep us out of war in Syria. But the concern you should have is they don't know what the hell they're doing. And there's 3 more years of this. And how long till they blunder their ass into another conflict?
That's why we vest that power in Congress as opposed to POTUS, in case he happens to be a warmonger or has a personal beef or an incompetent team. But the question you have to ask yourself is, if you elect a Marxist Muslim Brotherhood sympathizing community organizer as your commander in chief, what did you expect? I mean, yeah, come on. But what if this is not amateur hour? What if they're intentionally bungling it in order to weaken us? Well, that's why Congress has to step up and put a stop to this. You know, it's a temporary commander-in-chief, it's a temporary president, it's a temporary White House foreign policy team, temporary State Department. Congress can check them and fix it, but they won't. But the interesting thing is, you're talking about the piece Putin wrote. Well, now we hear that McCain's going to write one in Pravda to counter it. I mean, really? Jihad Jane McCain is going to be our response to Vladimir Putin? Come on. I mean, that can't possibly be worse. And I blame the Republicans for that. I especially blame you, Arizona. Quit electing this dipshit. Put him down. Rand Paul had a response, and it was pretty good. It's on our page. So if you're listening right now, just you're on Facebook, go to the Tex and Rex Show page in Facebook and like that page, and you will get notifications in your news feed when we're broadcasting, usually 10 p.m. Eastern, Sunday nights. And this month we're doing 10 p.m. Thursday nights as well, a special on obliterating Obamacare and the conservative comeback. And just as a shout-out real quick, go to www.don'tfundit.com, sign Ted Cruz and Mike Lee's petition to defund Obamacare using the continuing resolution, and get 10 people to sign it before the close of this show. If you're listening in your browser, you scroll down and click on the show page, Tex and Rex. You can like or follow the page there, and you'll get notifications in your Blog Talk Radio profile. And all the shows are available to listen to anytime on that page in your browser or mobile device. And if you go below the scrolling graphics, there is a download this episode link. Right-click on that, and you will download an MP3, play it in your MP3 device, burn it to a CD, give it out at your Tea Party meetings, Republican Party meetings, church meetings, what have you. Email it to people, but get the word out there. We have no advertising budget. We pay to do this show. This is a grassroots conservative show. 2014 is coming right up. You need to get the word out there. You are our only arm, and I want to thank everybody who shared the show, tweeted the show, put it out there. Anytime you see it, just, you know, you hit the like button. That's wonderful. Hit the share button. Send it out on Twitter. We especially, you know, thank our loyal fans who've been helping us get the word out there and really get the word out about, you know, grassroots conservatism, authentic conservatism, as opposed to this red rhino bullshit from the Republican Party. And we really appreciate it. The other thing to keep in mind is that the Syria thing is just a distraction, but it is a red line that was drawn by your commander in chief. And you know, he shouldn't be drawing these red lines without thinking it through, but that's what he did. And speaking of red lines, we've got somebody who manages to club the crap out of red lines joining us, Tex, and I'm sure he's got some choice words to say about Syria. You're live with Tex and Rex. Hey.
I say that lightly.
Hey, Chris, how's it going?
Good, buddy. How you doing?
Man, hey, Chris, we're gonna roll into the things that Syria, even though it's still on the table, Syria is also a distraction from the real shit that's going down here in D.C., and we got to get back to that. None of it has gone away. But before we get into all that stuff, why don't you give us your perspective on this dithering, this red line, the fact that Obama's pro-war 1 second and then backing away, looking like a wuss the next, and why these Republicans are just got this hard on for war.
Well, the Republicans, because they flapped their jaws, especially McCain and Graham, getting out in front of this thing, pushing it, there is a chance. I don't think most people are fooled, but there is a chance that Obama will gain some political points because he held off and, and they're spinning the spin of, he brokered this deal, he caused it to happen, blah, blah, blah. And he will get some political points for that. But I think most people realize that he bungled his way into it, and Putin saved his butt. And I think that Putin saw an opportunity. They talk about Putin owning it. That's all he ever wanted to do was own it. And I think that if he brokers this properly, because I keep saying this, if you don't secure those borders, isn't that funny? We're talking about borders again. But if you don't secure those borders, the U.S. is going to keep, training and pushing rebels, and we know chemicals come across those borders. I mean, I've posted all kinds of crap on that, across those borders, especially Jordan and Turkey. Iraq has its own problems, too. But I don't know. The bottom line is that Putin can get in there with a force, even if they use kind of a U.N. combined force to do this chemical removal. And they can help secure things along the way. This could be an interesting turn of events. I'm not saying I have it all pegged. I don't, but I've been watching Syria pretty carefully, for the last year, and watching how it unfolds. But the U.S. is, this is the biggest joke I've ever seen. What do we got in there? Like 8, 9, 10 ships or something like that? Who knows what we got in there? And some subs and everything else, and Russia's building theirs up, and China sent a couple over, and, I'm just thinking, shit, man, just pull the damn button and go to war and get it over with, because that's all what you bastards want anyway,
They're going to do it.
Well,
they're
going to
do it.
It's
ridiculous.
Over the next couple
exhausting.
Weeks, it's going to be excruciating, because what you're going to watch is they're going to have to get back onto the war footing. Right?
Yep.
And so now you got to watch some Fred Astaire action where they're going to start tap dancing about how, Assad hasn't lived up to this impossible, statement that we've made. He hasn't done this, he hasn't done that. So, now we definitely have to go to war now because of, whatever reason they've come up with. So the whole thing over the next couple of weeks is going to be how the hell does the U.S. get out of this thing where we're negotiating about the turnover of Assad's chemical weapon. It's already
right.
Saying we're not going to be fooled by this farce of a whatever, this farce foisted upon us by John Kerry. This is not fooling us. And so, we're going to wait and see. And, I tell you, over the next 2 to 3 weeks, they're going to figure out that they're going to have to go to war. And this time they're going to do it without going to Congress. Behind the scenes, they're going to be rallying the support of Congress and trying to do it with our allies, with the UK and everyone else. But I think we're going to do it one way or another. I don't really.
It'll be
no question. It's just it's a matter of when. But here's the thing, and just real quick, the fact is they're pushing for it one way or another. It's a fluid situation, but their goal is war because we know what it's about. It's about the pipelines. It's about the money. It's about the petrodollar,
right.
And also they have to keep it alive, whether they actually do a strike in the next week, month, or if it's later. They have to keep this topic alive in order to cover up the continuing resolution, the Patient Protection Affordable
right.
Care Act, the debt ceiling, and all that stuff. That's what this is about. But here's the fascinating thing. I'm going to play a clip, and then I want you guys to comment on it.
Okay.
You're seeing the left, right? You're seeing the left now start to become, apologetic over the whole thing and start to actually turn pro-war. We had mass amounts from the far left to the far right and everybody in between against this action, and now that it seems to have gone away, now we're starting to, you know, gin up the spin machine to provide Obama with cover. You know, he played Putin. He was deaf. This was his plan all along. Now he's got the diplomatic solution that only happened because he threatened military action. So you're starting to see the left come around to providing him with cover. And the Republicans' tack is, well, we want the war too, but we don't want to look like we like Obama. So what we'll say is he bungled it, but we still have to do it, only we have to do more than what he's doing. He's making us look weak. And so you've got this cadre of lefties who are allegedly anti-war lefties, and you got this cadre of the Democrat wing of the Republican Party, a.k.a. neocons, who are pro-war. They're on one side. And then on the other side, you got the rest of the country, normal people, libertarians, conservatives, honest progressives who aren't going to just provide Obama cover because he lied to them about being Hopi Changi and anti-war. Mm-hmm. And it's still a majority that's saying no. And now they're spinning this. I mean, here's Carney talking about how Americans appreciate Obama's indecisiveness on the issue. I mean, can you come up with a better way to provide cover? This is just – you can't – like we say all the time now – you can't make this shit up. We live in bizarro world. It's about a minute long. I want you guys to come. When we come back on this, the other side of this, let's go to Tex and then Chris.
Our approach to this problem in Syria, the president has been very clear about the need to respond and why it's important that Assad be held accountable. It is somewhat ironic when some members of Congress are critical after having asked for the president to ask Congress for authorization to then be critical of that effort, which, as I think everyone here reported, has involved an enormous amount of outreach, an enormous amount of information provided, both classified and unclassified, to members, as well as a very public effort to inform and educate the American people. And then I would simply say that when it comes to being commander-in-chief, I think that the American people, at least in my assessment, appreciate a commander-in-chief who takes in new information and doesn't celebrate decisiveness for the sake of decisiveness.
Yeah.
What the hell was that?
That is so true. What the hell were they talking about there? I celebrate indecisiveness for the sake of indecisiveness. That's far better. Hey, look how decisive he is. Oh, I don't know. I mean, this is just blatant incompetence. These are people with no plan. They don't know what they're doing. They're sitting there making statements left and right. Okay, so I can understand you get caught flat-footed, right? But what you do is you call a meeting, and you sit down and you talk it out over a day or two or three or however long it takes to figure out what your plan is, and then you get everyone on the same page, and then you go announce to the world what your plan is, and you continue to pursue that plan, right? They don't know what they're doing. They're just making it up as they go along. It's a real problem.
My God. Are you done?
Well, I don't think I'll ever be done complaining about how
but
I'm done for now.
You stalled, and I wasn't sure if you were ready for me to pitch.
Go ahead and jump in. But yeah, I.
Oh my God. Oh God, if they can spin this, like I said, I believe 30-40% of the people will go, yeah, that makes sense, because that's about how, informed 30-40% of the people are. I actually watched a small piece of Fox today, and they had on one of those typical liberal representatives that they seem to get on Fox a lot, and a conservative representative, and or Republican at least. And it was interesting. He was spinning it too. And the Republican, basically said the same common sense thing, going, we have no plan. You guys can say this all you want, but we didn't get here through any decisive action. We got here through a bumbling, series of events and a major spin machine called mainstream media. And they're covering his ass. And Putin, I think the guy laughing the most, chuckling the most, is Putin, because the whole concept, when they pulled their their ships and their personnel out of that TARDIS port. You know, I was kind of like, huh, interesting. I wonder why they did that. You know, what was going on behind the scenes? Because that's a legitimate port of theirs, and they have the right to be there. And so that was something that I watched. But I think that this is going to give them a chance to get boots on the ground even, you know. So it is going to be interesting to watch it play out, you know, how they try to
spin. Exactly. They can use this to state that, you know, the UN is in doing an investigation as to who used chemical weapons, and the UN will probably come back with some, oh, well, actually, the interesting thing about the UN report is they are not tasked with stating, and this should increase your suspicion.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They are specifically not tasked with stating who used them. Their only mission is to determine whether or not they were used, so the United States can blame Assad. And also saw a spokesman for the State Department stating that what we're talking about here are Assad's chemical weapons and putting Assad's chemical weapons under international control and blah, 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 right? Well, why are you stating what we're talking about here is Assad's chemical weapons? Because there must be other chemical weapons in the mix, right? Which would explain why the UN is going in to determine whether or not chemical weapons were used and not determine who the hell used them, right? Because it goes back to the fact that I think the rebel forces whose side we're on use the damn things in order to get us involved in the conflict in the first place. And so we don't want any sort of investigation that would turn out the fact that Assad didn't actually use them, but the rebels used them. And so we're going to punish Assad essentially for not using chemical weapons and for having chemical weapons used against him.
Right. Well, not only that, you know, anybody who has done any major review of the film work or the medical exam afterwards knows that whatever was used was a pretty weak batch, because there's people walking around with no masks on, and sarin gas is pretty nasty stuff. So it's just the biggest – it's almost like a B-rated movie Hollywood production. You know, that film footage.
Well, it's worse than that. It's worse than that. You couldn't even rate this as a B movie. It's even more nuts than that. Guys, believe it or not, we've only got 50 minutes in the first hour, and we got a lot to cover.
Wow.
It's been a busy week, and Syria, as important as Syria is, and I want everybody to understand, this is important, because Syria is not about Syria. It's not about gas. It's not about Assad. It's about the Saudis, the Qataris, their desire to have control over the oil lobby. It's, again, we talked about it on the Perpetual War, Perpetual Peace show. You can check it out on archives on the Tex and Rex show page on Blog Talk Radio, and also all the links are available Tex and Rex show page on Facebook. Make sure you like the page. Please share with people. Get the information out there. You don't have to agree with everything that we say. You don't necessarily have to like our style, but we're bringing you information and a perspective that the media is not. They're pro-war. They're pro-corporatism. They're pro, you know, the duopoly. So you really got to get people awake. And right now the wind is at our backs. These people are bungling this so much. This is the time to wake Americans up and let them realize it isn't Democrats versus Republicans. It's not conservatives versus liberals. It's not Occupy versus Tea Party. It's liberty versus tyranny. And on that we can all agree, and we got to get the House in order. Then we can have the fight about all the stuff that we disagree about. But we probably agree on 70%. Let's fix that and quit letting these people ruin our lives. But, you know, the thing is that as important as Syria is, it's really more about taking apart the United States than it is about what's going on in Syria. It's about breaking your bank. It's about covering up the failed Federal Reserve note petrodollar. It is about hiding the fact that they have these difficult votes and that the lefties in the Republican Party are having trouble reining in the actual conservatives, and they don't want you to know that that's what's going on. So they want to cover it all up, and we're going to get to all the stuff that they're trying to distract you with Syria. But I really want to focus on the fact that it is an important issue, and it does tie in domestically. Remember, it's the welfare warfare state. First, we're going to go with a little clip here. This is from Judge Napolitano, who always has a good perspective on what's going on. And he's talking about, how this really plays into the fact that the incompetence in the foreign policy puts us in danger and makes us look bad, but then it also affects our domestic policy. And then we're going to hear from Ted Cruz, who gave a foreign policy speech that libertarians and ANCAPs are going to find too aggressive, and traditional conservatives might find too non-interventionist. But that's probably because he's balanced it right spot on. So we're going to hear those, And then we're going to talk about that, and then we're going to transition to some of the domestic stuff that's really important that you've got to get busy on, that they're using Syria as a fear story to keep you distracted. And don't forget, Obamacare is going online October 1st unless it is defunded. So go to www.defundit.com, sign it, get 10 people to sign it before the top of the hour. Here's the judge.
As the president has pushed Congress for approval to strike Syria, it became clear that he may become the first American president in history to have war-making authority denied if Congress votes no. The outcome? Congress delays a vote as Russia emerges on top, all for the president to avoid being personally embarrassed, perhaps. Joining us right now is Fox News senior judicial analyst Judge Andrew Napolitano. Tell me it's not about ego.
You know, presidents speak two ways. They speak as the head of state, and they speak as a candidate wanting re-election. Mm-hmm. So a year ago, last August in 2012, speaking as a candidate who wanted re-election, worrying that Mitt Romney was creeping up in the polls, the president decides, I'm going to sound tough. What am I going to do about Syria? If they use chemical weapons, that's a red line, and we're going to get involved.
Right.
He wasn't speaking as the commander-in-chief. He wasn't speaking as the head of the executive branch of the federal government. But he also was visited with a problem a year later when it became apparent that somebody, either the rebels pretending to be the government or the government itself, used these chemical weapons. What is he going to do?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. President, do you really want Americans to be involved in a war where we have no interest in the outcome, where our freedom and our security is not affected one iota by what happens over there? You can't go around being the world's policeman because under the treaties we've signed and the international law to which we've subscribed, if we are not affected, freedom or safety, by the war, we have no legal right to become involved.
Excellent point. Right now, John Kerry is trying to work things out with the foreign minister of the former Soviet Union, of Russia, over in Europe somewhere. And what they're doing is they're trying to figure out whether or not that ad-libbed gaffe line that Kerry came up with a couple of days
ago.
That's
the one that he made when he hadn't had sleep in about 47 hours.
I saw that in the op-ed that you've got in the Washington Times today. That's the lead paragraph, and it's an excellent article. But what you talk a little bit about is the fact that here we are backed into a situation now where we're going to have to trust the Russians. And in fact, there's a White House official who says it's going to be up to Russia to make sure that this deal is done effectively. The Russians are playing us like a fiddle.
Well, look at the bitter irony here. Vladimir Putin is a trained killer, murderer, and torturer as a former KGB agent. Mm-hmm. Barack Obama is a trained lawyer, scholar, and expert in the Constitution, and he wins the Nobel Peace Prize.
Right.
Now, which of the two of them this week sounds like a Nobel Peace laureate, and which of the two of them sounds like a thug who wants to kill?
It's Putin's week. He's the winner.
It's not even a close call. As Ollie North just so articulately told Brian a few minutes ago, this is going to have long-term effects in the diplomatic community and in relations in the Middle East. And the Russians right now are dominant because the president is incompetent.
Well, real quickly, if Kerry and the foreign minister can't work things out, then we're back to ground zero.
And he's going to lose that vote in the Congress. That's the only reason they delayed the vote, because he doesn't want to be the first American president to have a request for war-making power turned down, even by large numbers of members of his own party.
And that's exactly where we started. So
this is going to keep going on, Steve.
I think you're right. All right. Good thing we've got you on retainer.
Pleasure.
Judge Andrew Napolitano, thank you.
I mean, the fact is that whether this administration's foreign policy under Obama and Kerry is incompetent, or whether it is intentionally designed to weaken us, doesn't really matter. What matters is it's got terrible consequences, which just proves to you that elections have consequences. Stop falling for hopey changey bullshit. Quit falling for severe conservatives that are actually liberal Democrats, and start getting some authentic constitutionalists into power and support them. Which is why you got to go to www.don'tfundit.com right now. It's not about Obamacare. It is about supporting the actual conservative constitutionalist wing of the Republican Party. What do you guys think of the judge? We'll go to Tex first and then Chris.
I think he's absolutely right. I mean, what you're talking about is, he's incompetent. this foreign policy team is absolutely incompetent. They do not know what they're doing. They have no plan. They have no strategy for what's going on in the Middle East. You know, we saw the situation where you had Iran rising up, right? The Iranians were rising up, calling on Obama to help out. Hey, look, you know, we want freedom and democracy here. Let's get rid of, you know, the Iranians. Maybe if we had supported that thing, we wouldn't have to be swimming around with Syria, because Syria would be completely isolated, right? But we didn't support them. Then we have Libya. We don't. What did we accomplish in Libya? Okay, we got rid of Gaddafi. What did we replace him with? There's absolutely no strategy going on in the Middle East. There's some sort of fight over strategy, I think, which is why the policy is so confused. So I think there are factions of the government that do have a policy that they want to see, and another faction that wants to see something else, and they haven't sorted it out. No one is in control, and the person who ultimately decides is the president. And so if you're seeing a disorganized foreign policy team, and a disorganized U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East, ultimately the fault falls on the shoulders of the president, because he doesn't know what in the hell he's doing. He has no policy there. And, you know, what, I mean, look, this gets down to what I was talking about with why would you ever want to be reelected president, because the second term always sucks. It's always about the investigation. You never get anything done, and that's exactly what's happening now. It's nothing but a 10 bajillion investigations into the Obama administration, what it's been up to in the first 4 years, what it's doing now. It's not accomplishing anything, and so the entire United States is drifting, essentially leaderless. And it's dangerous for us, because now our enemies are emboldened, and I think people are seeing that, oh, the United States isn't actually in charge of world affairs anymore. You know, okay, well, if we're not in charge of world affairs anymore, then all these conflicts are going to start blowing up. And as we've already seen, this incompetent foreign policy team has no foreign policy. They don't know what to do about any of these conflicts, and so they're going to respond to all of them in an ad hoc fashion. So for some reason, we're going to get involved in some, and for other reasons, we're not going to get involved in others. And without a foreign policy guided by self-interest, where we try to maximize our returns on where we're getting involved, we're just going to get involved willy-nilly, and we're going to end up bleeding the empire dry of blood and treasure for no reason. And again, we get nothing out of it. It's a disaster. And I think it's become clear not only to the rest of the world. I mean, they can see through this thing right now. Remember that John, Joe Biden was saying, oh, you know, people are, when Barack Obama gets elected, they're going to test him. And like a young John Kennedy, they're going to find that he's made of stern stuff or whatever bullshit he said. No, I think that Barack Obama's been tested. What they realize is the guy is a paper tiger, doesn't know what the fuck he's doing, and this entire team is completely incompetent, and he's a pushover. And Putin of all people, pulled Obama's chestnuts out of the fire. This guy didn't even know how to save himself. He had to rely on the Russians to help him out. I mean, that's just staggering.
That has huge implications.
Yeah.
Well, speak, you know, Tex, I'm glad you said that it's dangerous for us, because here's a simple fact. And this is why we have a constitution, so that we can have a deliberative body determine whether or not war is necessary. We don't give the power to one man. Now, by the same token, and with these resolutions that they were proposing, the Senate and the House were planning on giving Obama authorization and micromanaging the strike. That is an absolute recipe for disaster. Anybody who knows anything about military engagements will tell you. You know, war by committee is a guaranteed loss. It would be horrible any way you cut it, any time. You can't even get lucky and win when you're doing war by committee, which is why we vested the prosecution of war in one man, the commander-in-chief. The whole point is you have a deliberation about whether or not you go to war, and the people's representatives decide. And then they give that authority to one man, the president, to prosecute it, because you have to make decisive decisions quickly with your generals. You don't have time for committee meetings. And that's precisely the system that was set up. But here's the problem. When your commander-in-chief doesn't lead, or as Obama's been doing, leads from behind, or has incompetent people, or decides to go out full-on for war before he even had an impetus or even an authorization, it creates a situation that isn't just about putting egg on his face and making him appear like a loser, which it does, okay? But long-term, it has massive effects. Someone like Putin, who I would argue is not our friend, but he's not our enemy. But he is somebody we can work with. But he respects strength, and we're showing weakness. Al-Qaeda terrorists, jihadis across the world, they fear strength because, like any bully, when they're met with some force that actually stands up to them, they tend to cower. But if they smell weakness, they come after you. This has put us in greater danger, and this is a really important point because when America does not lead, danger ensues. Senator Ted Cruz talked about this, and this is at the Heritage Foundation on September 11th, which is obviously an important date regarding military responses. Keep in mind that we are not pacifists, we are not isolationists, and we shouldn't be neocon adventurous warmongers. There is a balance, and the Constitution strikes that balance, and I think Ted Cruz really articulates it well here. You don't have to necessarily agree with it. You don't even have to like Ted Cruz, but listen to the reasoning. The full 45-minute speech is available on the Tex and Rex show page. It's available in Tex and Rex's Liberty Militia on Facebook. If you see the picture of the promoting the show, you click on the picture. I've put all of these clips and articles in the comments. They're right there, all organized and really easy for you to scroll through and get the information you need. Use some critical thinking skills. Use the reason that God gave you and analyze this, whether you're on the left, the right, the center, the middle, unaffiliated, party affiliated, whatever. Start thinking for yourself and realize that things are not as black and white as the Fox News and the MSLSD make it out to be, and start thinking like an American who believes in liberty and the Constitution. Here's about 6 minutes of the key part of Ted Cruz's speech, but the whole thing is worth listening to.
It's interesting watching the media report on Syria because they tend to think in two-dimensional terms. You're either for military conflict or against military conflict, and it's you're either for every military conflict or no military conflict. And that makes sense if you're not focused on what the objective is. So there's been lots of talk about now the dove Barack Obama is suddenly a hawk. And with some amusements, journalists write that some of the more hawkish Republicans are suddenly doves. Well, let me tell you, in my view, President Obama is both too hawkish and too dovish at the same time. Why is that? He is too hawkish, too willing to use U.S. military might in defense of international norms in Syria in a way that is not directed at protecting our national security and could well undermine our national security. That is far too hawkish for the commander-in-chief, in my view. And yet, simultaneously, he is far too dovish when it comes to standing up and defending our national security interests. In my opinion, the President of the United States should stand up and say unequivocally, if Iran continues to proceed towards acquiring nuclear weapons capacity, the U.S. will use overwhelming military force to prevent them from acquiring those weapons. In simple, clear, categorical language. You know, one of the ironies is that the softer a leader is when dealing with enemies of the United States, the more likelihood there is for military conflict. One principle from time immemorial is that bullies and tyrants don't respect weakness or appeasement. The Arab world, appeasement only encourages more violence. It was not an accident that the nation of Iran released our hostages after 444 days, the day Ronald Reagan was sworn in as president. I am a big believer in peace through strength. Because of this administration's ambiguous messages on Iran, I think we have increased the likelihood of military conflict with Iran because those messages can only have been taken by the mullahs as encouragement that the United States, that the president will be less than vigorous protecting our national security. And that if they do proceed, the result might be an unbelievably tiny strike. That encourages military conflict. We need absolute moral clarity. And, you know, lots of folks like to say right now that America is war weary. And listen, I will readily admit I have no desire whatsoever to send our sons and daughters into harm's way. But that message shouldn't be misunderstood. That doesn't mean that America is at all reluctant to protect our vital national security interest. I'll tell you, just last week I was meeting with soldiers returning from Afghanistan and another group of soldiers heading to Afghanistan, and the answer every one of them said is, we stand ready to defend this nation against any threat anywhere in the world. If the focus is on defending our national security, we will do what it takes. But we're not willing to sacrifice our sons and daughters in defense of an amorphous international norm. Now, if you look across the rest of the world, you look at Russia, you look at China. Russia and China are major players, and right now, there are many who are embracing Mr. Putin's offer to resolve everything. Now, if the outcome of this offer is Assad giving up his chemical weapons, then that would be a wonderful outcome that we should celebrate, the world should celebrate. It would be good for everybody. But I will confess my attitude towards Russia is very much reminiscent of Reagan's attitude towards the Soviet Union of trust but verify. If you look at Putin's prior conduct, there is very little reason to have a high level of confidence that this is anything more than a delay tactic or a propaganda tactic. So I encourage the administration to do all we can to use Russia to convince Assad to turn over those chemical weapons. And if it becomes a question of fearing for the survival of the administration, there may be some remote possibility of it happening. But we shouldn't remotely be naive. We shouldn't remotely expect that Russia or China will do anything other than act in their own national interests. And we should understand that you don't deal with nations like Russia and China by embracing arm in arm and singing kumbaya. The one thing Russia and China understand and respect is strength. Principled strength. And they will act in their own interest, and we may be able to cooperate in specific ways where it is in their interest and our interest to do so. But we shouldn't be for a moment naive that Mr. Putin loves peace and the American way of life.
Cogent, logical. We shouldn't be naive. In peace, prepare for war, but don't go overseas looking for monsters to slay. This is a sound policy. The strength that we have, the strength that we have is our Constitution. It provides for a strong national defense, but it is sobered by our desire for liberty. And that's what he was talking about. And whether you like him or not, whether you agree with all of his points or not, you cannot argue with the fact that what he is stating there is a principled position, a constitutional position, and a position that would garner respect in the world from our enemies and our allies. This is exactly the opposite of what we are getting now with this incompetent administration run by a failed community organizer, a decent basketball player, and a passable golfer, and by neocon, hard-on-for-war Republicans who are giving this incompetent administration cover. Let's go to Tex and then Chris. Or Chris and Tex. Let's go, Chris.
Can we lose him?
I don't know.
I tend to agree with what Ted is saying, and I think that the important thing, and this is my attitude on Russia or China or any of them. You know, the thing that drives me nuts about the American dialogue, so to speak, which would obviously be driven by mainstream media and politicians, is how we play, keep trying to portray Russia in this as it was, you know, in the USSR days, without giving it credit for where it's come to over these years and the position that they have in the world. And number one, and number two, China. You know, we're always bitching and moaning and complaining, and China's the enemy, and then we buy their goods and borrow money from them. So the part that bothers me, and I respect what Ted Cruz is saying, but the part that bothers me is that if China is the enemy, then fix our country and get our economy straight and quit borrowing money from the enemy. Shore up our manufacturing in our country so we can make products and services for made in America to sell at Walmart, and quit selling our country down the drain in an imbalanced world trade. That's the part that pisses me off about the rhetoric, you know, about who's our enemy and who's not our enemy, and, you know, Putin's this and, you know, China's that. And it's like, God, you know, it's like, grow up. You know, I don't know if it's just a matter of they've got to continually manufacture enemies to keep people rooting for the team, you know, for the big A team, the American team. If we're going to be America, then be America. You know, quit trying to destroy our system, fix our problems. We're getting ready to go into another $900 billion debt ceiling increase. And I would bet there's Russia and China money in that borrowing, because there ain't a lot of people with a lot of money out there right now. You know, Russia has a very low debt-to-GDP ratio. China's higher, but it also has a huge economy. And they're sitting on a ton of our trade dollars, what, a $1.5 trillion or some kind of ridiculous number like that. They could crush us in a second if they dropped $1 trillion into the international market and sold it short. You know, they could destroy us. And all we do is piss and moan about who our enemy is, and then we go on with our hat in our hand going, hey, can you lend us some more because our politicians are too damn corrupt to fix our system. That's the part that frustrates me. You know, we've got history. I mean, America did great things for a long time, you know, saved the world twice. And we did, you know, in the Cold War, and you could have all kinds of debates about the Cold War, but, you know, this last 12 years is a mess. You know, almost every country, and what Dan was saying earlier, every country that we've touched in the Middle East is on fire right now. They're falling apart. Our economy is collapsing because of it. You know, there's times when you've got to be willing to say, hey, we ain't doing it right, and we need to get our butt out of everybody else's business, come home and take care of America before we go back out in the world and try to take over the world again. Because right now, when you look at, and you know, we have had this discussion before, and I started a thread on the BRICS countries, you know, I mean, there's a lot of deals going on all over the world that you'll never hear in mainstream media because it would freak Americans out. Because there's a lot of countries in the world that no longer trust America's leadership position. And I'm not talking about just with Obama. I'm talking about the last 12 years. And so here we sit. You know, we still haven't fixed any of our internal economic problems. We're getting ready to borrow another $1 trillion because our politicians haven't fixed our problems. They can't seem to do anything. We have the lowest approval rating of Congress in my history. You know what I'm saying? It's like, what, 9% or some kind of ridiculous figure like that? I think the rest of the world has real concerns that are viable concerns. I mean, get the ego aside and the typical American everything's a sport mentality out of this picture, and sit down and take a real look at what's going on in the world, and you begin to realize why countries like Brazil and Russia and India and China and South America have formed economic blocks and are working together and trading together, and they just put out $100 billion into a pool for an exchange fund, and you see all kinds of things happening that wouldn't be happening if America was taking care of America. That's the problem. You know, we can point at Putin, we can point at China, we can point at Venezuela, we can point at, you know, whoever we want. But the thing is we are where we're at. We're supposed to be the biggest, most powerful country in the face of the earth, the moral majority in the world. And the last 12 years, we've lost some ground. We didn't lose that ground because of Putin. We didn't lose that ground because of China. We lost that ground because people have become fat and lazy, and they keep voting in politicians who will give them shit. And that's what needs to change in America. I love this country, but I hate what it's become. You know, and I think the reason that Putin has a lot of respect on the world is because he's taking care of Russia. He's taking care of his country. Not he as one man, but, you know, he is the leader and has rebuilt their energy industry, largest exporter of gas and oil in the world. They continue to build new relationships and move ahead, you know.
Yeah, exactly, Chris. And one reason, look, because when they're dealing with him, they know what they're dealing with, right? Okay, so he's president of Russia. And
straight up?
Yeah, and when he gets involved in a conflict, it's pretty clear what he wants out of the conflict, right? And so you go get involved and you deal with this guy, but pretty much you know what this guy wants, right? And of course, he starts with maximalist demands and wants all these kinds of things. The problem with the United States is we get involved in conflicts for God only knows what reason. We don't even know why we're involved, you know? And then people don't know how to deal with you because they don't know what to give you. What is it you want that we get you out of here? Oh, we're standing up for this larger, you know, global principle, right? Well, what global principle are you even talking about? You know, like
drone strikes, is that a global principle?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it confuses people when they're dealing with us because they don't, when you go to the negotiating table, they don't know what they're negotiating. They don't know what we want. And then, you know, we have a completely incompetent foreign policy team, so we don't know what we want either, so we don't know how the hell to get out of there. But by God, we're going to occupy your country for the next 10 years until we figure out what the hell we wanted out of this conflict to begin with. Like, what are you even doing here? You know, and so, yeah, people don't have respect for us because they don't, I mean, I think they respect us military. Like, oh, God, the Americans are coming, and they're going to show up and they're going to stay forever, and they'll probably obliterate every, you know, military asset that we have. They respect that. But then we don't know how to get out of it because it's like, I don't know why I wanted to come to your house. I'm sure I wanted something out of it, you know, and we just keep hanging around. And then we leave for no reason. And because we're so mercurial, if you're our allies and we go get involved in something like, oh, absolutely, we're committed to this principle, we'll drop it, you know, just like a ton of bricks as soon as it's inconvenient for us and not get anything out of it because, you know what, we didn't want anything in the first place. And our allies are like, who the hell are these people? Why am I getting involved in conflicts with them? They're completely schizophrenic. They don't know what they want. They don't know what they're doing. And if you're our ally that we're intervening on behalf of, we'll sell you down the river in 3 seconds. So that's all the people, all the countries at Yalta that thought we were going to stand up for them in Yalta, they screwed them over. And then Poland with their, you know, missile defense system that we said that we were going to give them recently, they said, yeah, we want you to put your missile defense system here in Poland because we don't ever want to be under the thumb of Russia. And the Russians said, you know, everyone who approved this agreement in Poland, we're going to go seek after you and we're going to go kill all of you, essentially is what the Russians said. We're not messing around here. And then when Obama, you know, gets into office, he says, oh, yeah, we're not going to give you that missile defense system after all. And he pulled it out. Well, great. Now you got a whole bunch of polls on record stating that they want to defend their country and they get screwed over. So how does it feel to be a U.S. ally? We don't have any interest. We're just roaming around making shit up as we go along. And it's dangerous because it sends the message to the entire world that we don't know what we're doing. We're mercurial. We're intervening for no real reason. We don't even know what we want. And we could leave. We could stay. We don't even know. It's a recipe for chaos.
Yeah, and then you move that forward into the Middle East, the last 12 years in the Middle East, and I mean, it's a nightmare. Nobody reported on Iraq and all the shit that's going on in Iraq right now, or the death.
97 people were killed last week.
Afghanistan. I know, in Afghanistan, daily. You know, we spent our life's treasure, our blood and our money in that country, and then somewhere along the line, nobody reports on this, but somewhere along the line, when we were working out the last details of staying longer, not staying longer, we got kicked out. You know what I mean? They are like, we've had enough of you. We can't figure out, you know, you can't rely on our politicians. I'm not saying you can't rely on America or our soldiers. I mean, we are an incredible country, but our politicians are insane.
That's because
you know?
We keep electing 97%. We keep electing 97% of the same assholes. That's why we need term limits. That's why we need to get rid of these guys.
Bingo.
And Chris,
actually,
Ted,
well,
you both
had
said
a greater reelection rate than the Politburo had a greater reappointment rate.
Isn't that amazing?
The Politburo was less stable in terms of membership than the U.S. Congress was in terms of its membership.
God,
and we talked
insane.
About that during our Back in the USSR show, which is still worth listening to, even though, you know, our shows are generally on topic for what's going on during the week, but they're always thematic and there's stuff to pull out. So if you're on Blog Talk Radio right now, if you just click on the Tex and Rex show page link, you go to our page, all the shows are listed there. Scroll down, look at Back in the USSR. We talked about that very thing. Let's change over in the Politburo. I mean, here's the thing. What you guys just pointed out is exactly what Ted highlighted. You know, if we don't lead, and leading doesn't mean just going and blowing shit up or surgical miniature strikes or whatever the hell Kerry said.
Or drone attack.
If we don't lead, it is dangerous, and it's not just dangerous for us. It's dangerous for everybody. I mean, you have to think, Syria is a debacle. Right now there's somewhat of a diplomatic solution, but who knows where that's going to go. It's very fluid. Putin is going to angle this thing to his benefit, and our incompetency is likely to have it blow up. Egypt is on fire. Don't forget that. Turkey's on fire. You've got jihadis in the Philippines, in Africa. Christians are being attacked by people all over the world. Jihadis are emboldened. Al-Qaeda is threatening attacks in the U.S. Al-Qaeda. Okay. Yet we are we're going to be sending arms to Al Qaeda in Syria. I mean, this is freaking frightening. And what you really have to understand is that you need sober, level-headed leadership. And Ted Cruz just right there highlighted a sober, clear policy that doesn't give any ambiguity to our enemies, and also puts our allies in a position where they understand what we're doing. It's sober. It's level-headed. You always have to be prepared for war. War is not going away. Bad guys are not going to stop trying to kill us. But you do not do the wrong wars. You do not instigate wars. You do not go seeking wars in order to boost your military-industrial complex defense contractors who funneled money into your campaign. That's what has to stop. Now, the interesting thing is that Rand Paul and Ted Cruz have been leading this actual conservative, constitutionalist agenda in the GOP, okay? And now, you know, they're getting attacked for it. Even Newt Gingrich is defending them against people like Chris Christie and Jeb Bush and even Charles Krauthammer and all these other guys, right? But what the meme that's being put out there right now is that Rand and Cruz are serving their own ambitions over and against the party. They're not being party loyalists. They are going over and against the party because they have their own ambitions, and so this is just a game. This is what the left is saying. This is what the leftist media is saying. Where are they getting this from? Do you think they came up with this on their own? This is being fed to them by Karl Rove and little Johnny Boehner and Jihad Jane McHammed. That and Eric Cantona. This is the red rhinos feeding the lefty media weaponry against the real conservatives in the Republican Party. And the fact is that
Boehner
Rand and Ted
that they don't listen to him.
Exactly. That's what it's all about.
This guy has his own agenda. I don't know. This guy's interested in the Constitution. That's not what I'm about. What's going on here? I'm trying to sell out everything to Obama. I'm not trying to lead. I'm just trying to do what Obama wants. And these guys, they seem to have their own agenda. So let me complain about that. That's what's going on.
That's exactly what it is. That's because he is just wants to hang out in Washington circles, hang out with his friends on the left, his little girlfriend Nancy Pelosi, and funnel the big government state with the hopes that somehow if he appeases Obama and they kind of, you know, talk badly about him and go back home and speak conservative to their constituents, they can gain the White House and pick up the Senate, and they will have the bigger government to do whatever the hell they want with in 2014 and 2016. That's what it's about. But the fact is that Rand and Ted are not only standing on principle, they're not only following the Constitution, they're not only actually representing the people, okay, but they are making a savvy electoral politics play. Now, if you can do both of those things, that's how you win. That's what Newt Gingrich did. That's why he was so effective.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that what they're doing is they have to go over the party. Remember, the Rose conservative kill pack is still out there, right, trying to prevent Lindsey Graham, Mitch McConnell, Lamar Alexander, Enzel, and Cornyn, and all those other losers from getting primaried by you know, having delivering money to the red rhinos as opposed to the real conservatives, okay? But they're going over that machine right to the people. And the only way that this is going to get fixed on the national level is if you put down your swords and quit nitpicking with each other about little quibbling bullshit and unite and send a grassroots tsunami of support for these constitutionalists. And whether you agree with everything or not, whether you think they're too aggressive and not ANCAP enough and not libertarian enough, or whether you think that they're too libertarian and not, you know, conservative, doesn't matter. This is the sweet spot right now, and this is your shot. This is what
yep.
you got, and it's good because they follow the Constitution. So get behind them and quit quibbling and nitpicking and always looking for an excuse to tear down Rand and Ted when you've got John Boehner, John McHammed, Lindsey Graham, Eric Cantona, Paul Ryan, and all these – Marco Rubio. These are your other choices. Give me a break. Stick with these guys, okay? And I'm not talking about 2016. I'm talking about what they're doing right now. Rand and Ted worked their ass off to prevent the war in Syria, and they're working their ass off to prevent the Patient Protection Affordable Care Act, otherwise known as Obamacare or Boehner Care, from coming online and wrecking this economy and costing jobs. So get behind them. You've got to go to www.don'tfundit.com. Make sure you listen to and share the last two Thursday shows that we did. The conservative comeback, obliterating Obamacare, part one and part two. We're going to do another one this coming Thursday on the same topic, and this is about forcing Obama into a box. The guy's on his heels. He's incompetent. He's weak. He's got cover from the media, but people aren't buying it because it doesn't make sense. You heard what Carney said. You know, the American people like a president who's indecisive. No, we don't. Nobody does. Okay? So they're trying to spin it, and the only reason they have any power of spinning it is because the Republicans are giving him cover. Put the pressure on. Right now is the time for conservatives to actually stand up and do what Gingrich did in 1995, which is force a popular, powerful – and, I mean, let's be clear. Clinton was not incompetent. This guy is incompetent. Clinton was never this weak. Clinton was strong when Gingrich became Speaker of the House. Yet Gingrich was able to put together such a powerful conservative movement that most of the people in the country were backing, that he was able to force Clinton to triangulate to the right. And we got tax cuts. We got entitlement reform. We got balanced budgets. And things were actually working out pretty good. Were they great? No. Were they wonderful? No. But we were moving back in the right direction because of that. And this time it's even easier to do it because Obama is so weak. But Mitch McConnell is not doing his job in the Senate, right? He's talking conservative because he's got to make sure that the Rand Paul voters in Kentucky reelect him. Please don't do that. Get rid of the guy. And Boehner and Cantona are trying to whip their, quote, you know, these crazy wacko bird Tea Party caucus in the House into shape, but they're not going to get anything on Justin Amash and Trey Gowdy. Those guys are courageous fighters, and they're not going to give in. So that's what you have to do, and you have to call them, and tell them no war, quit pussyfooting with Obama and giving him everything he wants, no CR with Obamacare, and if you're going to raise the debt ceiling, which they're going to kind of have to, and I'm okay with that because we want to gently glide down from the Federal Reserve, but you don't give up something like that without getting something for it, and taking Obamacare offline is going to save jobs and save lives. You can call them. The House switchboard for little Eric Cantona, 202-225-2815, and a little crying pan Johnny Boehner, 202-225-0600. Make sure you call them and let them know what's what and what's going on. Now, here's the interesting thing. The big fear right now, you know, they're going to use Syria as a cover. The big fear is this shutdown, right? The government shutdown. Oh, the government shutdown. The sky's going to fall. Everything's going to be over. We're all going to die. No, we're not, okay? And the fact is that if there is a shutdown, whether the media says it's the Republicans, the conservatives, the Tea Party, or what have you, the very simple fact is it is not. If there is a shutdown, it is Barack Hussein Obama and Harry Reid. That's who's going to shut down the government because they're not willing to negotiate, which is what the Constitution calls for between Congress and the executive, on constitutional points. And Mark Levin explains it beautifully, and then I want you to listen towards the end of this clip. It's about 2.5 minutes where he lets you know what he thinks of Eric Cantona.
We'll do a little bit, then you'll have the whole weekend free, because as you know, the government's already shut down. It's 7:12. What time is it on the East Coast here? It's 7:12 p.m. Eastern time, which means the federal government has shut down officially. It actually shut down, let's see, Friday afternoon, probably 3:30, 4 p.m., and it'll be open again, you know, at some time in the morning on Monday. And you won't feel a thing. Essential personnel will still be in place, that is the military and law enforcement, intelligence, and so forth, so you don't have to worry about that. We love our weekends, don't we? And yet the government shut down. So the government, as I speak, is shut down. You feeling anything, Mr. Producer? You feeling anything, Mr. Call Screener? Just hungry, exactly. Well, maybe we have a food stamp for you. They're not even stamps anymore. They're credit cards. How about you folks out there? In your cars? Still in your offices? In your homes? The government shut down. Do you feel anything? Wait a minute, what am I going to do? I don't know how to crap. I don't know how to eat. You don't feel a thing, do you? No. In fact, you're happy. It's Friday evening. Maybe you're going out to dinner. Maybe you're going to go bowling, go to a Little League game. You know, whatever. You're going to relax. You're going to be thinking about Saturday, and then Saturday thinking about Sunday, and then Sunday, oh my God, I got to go back to work. Anyway, the point is, the weekends are almost liberating. It's like, gosh, I'm free. Congress is out of town. The Supreme Court's out of town. Obama's taken off for Martha's Vineyard. I think we should move the White House to Martha's Vineyard. The guy loves it. Move it to Martha's Vineyard. With just one deal. One deal. He has to stay there for 6 months out of the year and not sign a damn thing. But that won't work. But the weekends are liberating. The holidays are liberating. And the government's not even functioning except for essential personnel. And we feel great. We just want to extend that to some of the other days of the week. But then Cantor will be all over TV on the weekend shows. I can't shut the government down. It is shut down, you idiot, as you speak.
It is shut down, you idiot, as you speak. It's shut down right now. Are you having trouble? I'm not having any trouble. I'm having a good time. I hope you're enjoying it out there in Radio Land, ladies and gentlemen, because the government is closed. You know what? If it didn't open tomorrow morning, you'd still have your breakfast. Still have gas in your car. You'd still get yourself to your business or work or get the kids off to school. It won't make a damn difference to you, except that maybe they won't have their hand in your pocket. Let's go to Chris and then Tex.
Yeah, I totally agree with what he's saying, and I think that it's kind of like the serious spin. You know, they started spinning the lie, and everybody started repeating it, and it's the same thing with the government shutdown spin. You know, they started spinning the lie, how terrible it was going to be, and it was going to be the Republicans' fault, and blah, blah, blah. And next thing you know, everybody's afraid to act. And anybody who's researched, which Mark Levin has actually done whole segments on all the shutdowns, you know, that have occurred and the results, and, you know, and people were challenging Newt on this, and Newt said, well, we were reelected the first time since 1926 or 9, you know, with a majority. You know, the second cycle, and so I don't know what you're trying to say when you say it was negative, because we got shit done. We brought the president to the center, and we got welfare reform, and the debt ceiling was, or the debt was actually reduced, and cut some departments, and, you know, got the Contract with America points done. You know, so
it's session with the press.
Yeah, it's that same old thing.
They got that
and
press.
These.
Who cares?
And like
they got reelected.
And like Levin says, it's the damn French Republicans who are always surrendering. The problem is not the left. The left does what I've always known the left was going to do. And I've said this 1,000 times, and I'll keep saying it until people finally get it. You know, it is not Obama. It's how people react to him. It's when you have people who fold and vote to raise taxes and never hold them accountable. You know, we're going into a debt ceiling increase, and there is no negotiation. Instead, we've been talking about Syria. You know, there's no conversation about cutting government, about reforming, you know, because, you know, I studied Newt, and all of us did, but, you know, listened to Newt and studied him. He had a complete government reform package, you know, and people have shown the waste in government. Nobody is even talking about it, addressing it, or even bringing it to the table. You know, they don't want to reform government, folks. They want the corruption. They want the overexpenditure. They want, you know, America to, I don't know, fail. I have no idea what. These people are psychos. You know, and that's the problem, is it's on our side, not their side. Their side does what their side does as liberals. But if you don't have Republicans who stand for anything, and you don't have leadership, especially leadership, and you have people, Republican leadership, who beats up people who were voted in '10 and recently, like with Ted Cruz, to fix this shit. We didn't vote these guys in to be like John McCain. We didn't vote them in to be like John Boehner. You know, why are we allowing these people to beat up people we voted in to fix this shit? That's the part that frustrates me about American politics, is not the left, but it's the French Republicans on the right. That's what bothers me. I'm done.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the thing is, look, as far as I'm concerned, they're on the other side because they do everything the other side wants, because as soon as they get a negative bit of press, or there's an article written about them, or someone on the, you know, mainstream media says something bad about them, then they completely cave in to what the other side wants. And so what the hell good are they? You know, they have battered wife syndrome, so get the hell out of the party, you know. You don't want to be here. You don't like what the party stands for. You don't like what the people support, so fuck off. You know, we don't need you. Just go home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll find someone else. But then, oh, no, you can't find someone else. You're stuck with these surrender nicks, right? So you have to elect them, because if you pick your own person, then we're not going to fund that person, and then we're going to go out there and say that they're bad, you know, Republicans, or, you know, we're going to, you know, kibosh them so that they can't get elected, so we only have our establishment Republicans. Because, look, the fact is, you know, the older I get, the more I'm convinced of this. The Democrat Party has infiltrated the Republican Party. The leadership of the Republican Party aren't actually Republicans. They disdain their voters. I saw this when I was in Washington multiple times. They hate their own voters. They think that the people who vote for the Republican Party are stupid, ignorant, dangerous, don't understand how Washington works, because Washington doesn't work, and they don't want anything to do with it. Okay, well, that's fine if that's what you believe, but fuck off. You're not our leaders, right? We'll find other people. So if you don't want to be the leadership of the party because you actually hate the party, then get the fuck out. I mean,
right.
That's basically where I'm at. And the thing is, how do you tell other Republicans, oh, well, you know, I think Tom Boehner's just doing what he can with, you know, what he's dealing with up there. I think Mitch McConnell, you know, he's trying to take a moderate stance. I think Karl Rove, you know, he's really the architect. He's some fucking genius or whatever. These people suck. It's unbelievable to me that they still have jobs and they still get paid for doing this shit, because they're fucking the voters over every single day. And look at the approval rating in Congress. The approval rating in Congress has gone up since they decided that, hey, I don't think we want to go to war in Syria. It's amazing. Once Congress starts doing what the people actually want, then,
right,
all of a sudden, people start supporting it. But every time they come back, they're like, oh, yeah, well, ever since we've had all this conservative stuff, people, you know, they really hate what Congress is doing. Well, because they keep governing, you know, over what people want, like stop deficit spending. Stop, you know, passing this stupid immigration bill that's going to do nothing but, you know, destroy wages and employment in this country, you know, and dilute the vote as well. You know, stop doing all this stuff. But then they're like, well, people, they just want to see Congress working. Like, the country has all these problems and Congress isn't working together, so people would support Congress if they'd see it working. No, actually, I hate Congress when it's, quote, working, because when it's working, it's basically got the American people laid over on a, you know, pool table and giving it to you, you know? I hate it when Congress is working. I want to see Congress not working, right?
Nice.
Which is
shooting ticks.
Exactly, and that's what you saw in the Syria debate. Congress wasn't working. Congress was like, fuck this. And, you know, it's like both houses of Congress had, you know, the right side had their middle finger up, and the left side had their middle finger up. It was a double middle finger. And like, no, we're not doing anything. And all of a sudden, the approval rating of Congress goes up, because that's what people want. They don't want to see Congress work.
They want to see Congress not do this crap.
Right.
That's a good point. Where the American people are.
That's a good point.
Yet you have the leadership of the Republican Party sell you down the river and then tell you the whole time that, oh, well, you know, this stuff isn't helpful. Get rid of these people. Who is voting for these people in these districts? I mean, what is going on over
there? Low-informed voters.
What is going on in Kentucky?
Are you kidding me?
It's low-informed voters. This is the problem. You identified the problem right there.
He's endorsed by a Tea Party guy. McConnell in Kentucky is endorsed by a, quote, Tea Party guy who is a registered fucking Democrat.
Yep.
Most of this
Tea Party movement has
been completely infiltrated from the get-go by the leadership of the Republican Party and by activists in the Democrat Party. The Tea Party isn't even the Tea Party. It's a completely infiltrated movement.
Yep.
All right, you're absolutely right about that, Tex. You're absolutely right, Tex. It is infiltrated. Here's the thing. See, laziness, apathy, and low-informed voters. And believe it or not, some of you grassroots activists, you're low-informed voters. You get an email from blah, blah, blah Tea Party group. Do you check it against anything? Do you cross-reference it? Do you verify it? Or do you just say, hey, someone with a label Tea Party said that this guy's a Tea Party candidate, so he's got to be the conservative who'll vote for him. Well, guess what? That's how you fucking got Marco Rubio, okay? And he's not Tea Party, and he's not conservative, okay? And they're doing it to you all over the place. It's a typical ploy of people like Rove to go ahead and run two horses and get you to pick one that looks more like what you want when, in fact, they both work for him, okay? So you got to start thinking. And you got to get other people involved, and you got to get them informed, and you have to realize you're not going to find the perfect candidate, all right? But you can find the best possible candidate, and the measure by which you measure them is not their rhetoric. It's the Constitution and their record. And if you look at the record, you can see Justin Amash, Facebook posts and tweets every vote, why he voted yes, why he voted no. That's transparency. On the other hand, the most transparent presidency ever is so opaque, you don't even know what the hell they're doing. And frankly, I don't think they know what they're doing. We talked about their incompetency, but that's why it's covered up. Okay? You need more transparency. You need more accountability. You've got to get other people, and I don't care if they're from the left, the right, libertarian, center, they voted for Gary Johnson, they voted for Mitt Romney, Newt Gingrich, they wrote in Ron Paul. It doesn't matter. Get them to realize that we have to work together and find the best possible candidates who can give us what we're looking for, what Tex just said. Congress didn't go for the strike in Syria. 90% of Americans didn't want it. Suddenly their approval rating goes up. Well, of course their approval rating goes up. We avoided World War III because the Constitution worked. Oh, my goodness. You know, the power to wage war is vested in the legislature, not the executive, and it worked out. We prevented a stupid war. Now, it could still happen. It's probably only delayed. That's besides the point. Keep calling them, telling them you don't want it. But get people in there. You got to put pressure on these people. What you have to do is you have to make them fear reprisal from you more than reprisal from their backers and the bankers and those who are bankrolling their campaigns from Raytheon and Lockheed Martin and all that crap, okay? And the way that you do that is use your power. Rex, we don't really have any power. I mean, we only get to go vote. We're not even sure they're counting the votes. And, you know, we send in those fax blasts and emails. We sign Ted Cruz's petition. Well, no, you're not signing Ted Cruz's petition. That's the fucking problem. 1.3 million? There's 300 million people in this country. There should be 3 to 10 million signatures on that thing. So you're not signing it. And if you're signing it, you're not telling other people about it. All right? You can tweet it out. You can Facebook it. But the best thing to do is to actually talk to somebody in person or on the phone and tell them, this is why this is important. And if you're not sure you can articulate it, barring my colorful language, give them this show. I'll tell them. Here, right now, just share this with them. Hey, you. I know you're not involved politically, you're not sure what's going on, but you smell that there's a rat, there's something odd in this country, you can't quite put your finger on it, you don't know who to trust, you think the government's lying to you because they're spying on you, they've lied about the using the IRS as a political tool, and politicizing the FBI to cover up Benghazi, they've lied to you about why we're at war, they've lied to you about weapons of mass destruction, Bush was a liar, Cheney was a liar, Obama's a liar, Biden's a liar, Kerry's a fool, yes, you smell something, you just haven't quite figured it out, let me tell you what's wrong. What's wrong is that you have been too busy in your life, You've been too busy with your kids, your business, paying your bills, trying to find a job. I know it's tough. It's tough out there, and it's going to get far, far worse, especially when Obamacare comes online, because it is a jobs killer. It is not a health care bill. It is not insurance reform. It is not medical in nature. It is designed to kill jobs so that you will have to become dependent on them. Because as soon as you become dependent on them for food and health and money, they own you as a voting bloc, because then you can't stop voting for them because you don't have anything of your own, only what they give you. That's called slavery. That's what's happening. You have to do something about it. Voting is important, but elections aren't until November. And this year the major elections are in Virginia and New Jersey, a special election in Massachusetts. But next year it's the midterms. And they're already jockeying for position. What you need to do is call them, and you need to go to www.don'tfundit.com and sign it, and you need to get 10 other people to do it, so that by the end of this week, we've got 3 to 5 million signatures, which will represent somewhere between 30 and 50 million Americans to Congress. Now they're scared. Now they're going, oh, shit, the people have figured out the game. They realize that we pander to the connected insurance companies, the medical drug providers, the pharma, you know, industrial complex, Raytheon, Lockheed Martin. They figured the Qataris, the Saudis, they figured out who we really work for. And so now we're going to have to be cautious and be careful and figure out how to appease them. Well, the only way you can appease us is to do what we hired you to do. Right? The Founding Fathers fought a war for independence from the most powerful military force the world had ever seen because of no taxation without representation. What you have is no representation without representation. You're electing representatives who are not representing you. And as Tex lucidly pointed out, when they did represent you by preventing Obama from going into his private little Saudi war, you liked it. Well, you want more of that? Build an army. Send a grassroots tsunami to Washington. Quit sitting back on your ass, stuffing your face with Cheetos, and watching Dancing with the Douchebags or Fox and Fools or MSLSD, and do something. Let your congressman know. Let Eric Cantnot know. Let Mitch McConnell know. And let little crying pan Johnny Boehner know you are displeased, and you're going to make them pay. Once this groundswell, this large voice says that in unison, and we don't have to agree on everything, but we have to agree on this. Send that message. This is the time to make them listen, and this is the time when the actual conservatives in the Republican Party can box Obama in. We've got a debt limit coming up. They want $1 trillion so that we can service what we already can't afford to pay. We got the continuing resolution because Harry Reid hasn't passed the budget, so they need to fund the government beyond October 1st. And there is a bill out there in the House that actually has Obamacare defunding language in the continuing resolution. It fully funds every aspect of government except the $1 trillion for Obamacare. It cannot be decoupled by Mitch McConnell. Force Boehner and Cantnot to send that over to the Senate. Harry Reid won't want to sign it. He's going to send it back. Well, then guess what? The government will shut down. That won't be the Republicans' fault. The media might spin it that way. It'll be Harry Reid's fault. And if Mitch McConnell will actually unleash Mike Lee and Ted Cruz and Rand Paul, there are some Democrats who might have to play ball because they're running close races, and people are becoming more conservative and more libertarian, not more progressive, they might actually be able to pass it. Oh, well, then Obama will veto it. Sure, because he's so in love with his takeover of American jobs and destroying the American economy the way he's destroying our foreign policy, that he will veto the bill, and the government will shut down, and it'll be on his head, and that'll be okay. It'll save you some money. Yeah, I'll tell you what, if the government shuts down, you'll still have your military. You'll still have essential law enforcement. Social Security checks still go out. Medicare still gets processed. Yes, if you're trying to apply for Social Security, maybe you'll have a little trouble. So what I would recommend to you do is before October 1st, go apply for your Social Security if you're in that age range. Otherwise, it doesn't matter. And so then what happens is the government will shut down. The only place in the entire country that will be severely affected negatively as far as economics goes is the Imperial City, since 80% of the economy here is government or government contractor related. Now, I'm all for it because it'll be great for traffic and I won't deal with rush hour, but by the same token, you won't be spending money on all these people. Make them feel the pain. They chose to work for the government. Why aren't they voting to make sure that the Obamacare is defunded so that they can keep their jobs? They're the ones who are for it. So the Republicans aren't forcing a shutdown. The Republicans are trying to save money. And when I say Republicans, I'm talking about conservatives. I'm not talking about Johnny Boehner. He has to be forced. You're the force to do that. Get off your ass and do it. Back to you guys.
Well, absolutely, Rex. I mean, I think we need everybody needs to sort of start taking a stand and start questioning our own party and who's leading it and what the hell we're doing here, because I think complacency is what led us to where we are. And I think everyone, as you can see in various polls, are dissatisfied with the direction that the country's going, the direction the party's going, with our Congress, with our president, with our economy. I mean, everything's gone to shit because everybody's just been showing up and voting, waiting for the people in the news to tell them who to vote for, and then wondering why nothing has changed. Well, you're going to have to start asking hard questions. You need an informed citizenry and people who actually care and are involved at the locality all the way through in order to make sure that we're affecting the change that we want. So Syria is just a symptom of a larger problem, and we have many across a variety of issues. But I think people need to start doing something about it, and paying attention, having the conversations, uncomfortable conversations often, with their friends and neighbors. And you know what? You can learn a lot of things even from people on the other side, because let's face it, when the Patriot Act came through, you know, there's a lot of Democrats who were against the thing from the get-go. And looking at it now, well, you know, there's a lot to question that's going on in that thing with everything that's being revealed with the NSA. So just because they're on the other side doesn't mean that they don't have a point in some areas. And we, I think, as American citizens, need to sit down and think beyond party and start thinking about what the hell is actually wrong with this country, how we're getting screwed over, and make sure that this type of shit doesn't happen to us in the future, and so that our elected officials are actually governing in our interests. And as I mentioned, it is getting time where I need to go because I have some things going on that I've talked to you about. But thanks for everyone who's been out there listening, and I hope you found this informative, and you know, take these lessons with you and carry them forward and look at this stuff as you're listening to the news, and certainly as you're talking to your friends and other people who are politically minded, and even people who are not politically minded. And, you know, look, I have a lot of uncomfortable conversations with people all the time who are on the other side. And, yeah, they'll yell and sort of come at you and, you know, say all sorts of things, which aren't fun. But, you know, the best thing about that is that, you know, I don't take any of it personally. They're expressing their belief. And sometimes I learn from them. Sometimes I learn from me. And, you know, I think everybody here as American citizens needs to start doing that and engaging in those types of conversations. But I got to let you guys go. So good luck, everyone. And, you know, thanks a lot.
That was awesome.
Oh, nice shooting, Tex.
Right on. Chris?
You waiting on me? Oh, yeah.
So I guess I'll turn over to Chris.
Yeah, no, Tex, thanks, bud. That was beautiful. That was awesome. You know, he just nailed it. And it's so important. You know, it goes back to when we all met. You know, sometimes I think about the three of us and Robert and the groups and the people we've, you know, had on the shows. You know, and I'm just, some days I'm just like, my God, you know, how did this all come together? And what it was just a bunch of knuckleheads that were pissed off, who had the ability to research, do some critical thinking, that took the primary seriously. And the problem is people took their fear seriously is what happened, instead of the primary seriously. And I don't know if people can understand that. To me, it's kind of a spiritual thing. or not kind of, but you know what I'm saying. But people ran in fear. They ran. They were so, this whole fear of Obama and, you know, fear of the left and anybody but Obama and, oh, my God, you know, oh, my God, who's the most electable? And that whole strategy was based on a lie and was based on fear. And you cannot live your life that way. There is nothing ever good comes from it. And it frustrated me to no end to watch people, especially people of faith, who bought into this fear. You know, this country's gone through a lot. And anybody who's ever studied history as extensively as we have knows that there's been some up and down times in America. And America survives it because it always comes back to some core values and core principles. And the more people adhere to personal responsibility, to smaller government, to decentralized government, to the Constitution, to the rule of law, the healthier the country is. We have become, and it's just mind-boggling because I grew up in the Cold War, we have become what we criticized, and not in all ways, but, you know, of the USSR, of this huge, you know, we criticize China all the time, and it's kicking our ass economically, you know? And we criticize, you know, socialism, and we are it now. You know, what America has evolved into, the bloated bureaucracy, it always, the bigger government gets, the more people are attracted to the power and the security of being attached to it, because when government can steal money from other people, you're always going to get your wage or your chunk of the pie or your grant. The more corruption occurs, I would bet when I look at the annual budget and I look at this upcoming battle, well, there's not going to be a budget battle. They're just going to roll over and sign it, you know, minus whatever, $100 billion argument, whatever. In this, it's a drop in the bucket. But when you look at the amount of corruption that resides in government in this country, I always knew socialism was coming, you know, because of watching the signs my whole life. But I never thought I would see so much corruption that I see today. And so many people willing to accept it. And that's where it's you. That's where you as a citizen, this is your country, and you have to demand accountability. You have to help people get elected who give a shit about their country and fixing some of these problems, because this is unsustainable. Our debt and our unfunded liabilities, you know, like Levin talks about, we're dealing with some $90 trillion debt, you know, unfunded liability issue. And you look at the rest of the world and the deals that are going on, you know, between like the BRICS consortium and countries starting to do business together and circumnavigating the U.S. trade dollar. When you look at that, that is the last thing. That is our gold standard, the petrodollar and the U.S. trade dollar, where everything, you know, transfers back and forth between U.S. dollar. You know, when countries no longer trust our dollar because we are so corrupt that we won't fix our internal economic problems or our moral problems, if you want to get into that conversation, but I won't go down that road, but just food for thought. These countries, it's called survival after a while. It doesn't matter how much another country likes us. If they can't trust us, they're going to go find a new big country to do business with, i.e. Russia, China, whoever. And this is what's happening, and it's been building for the last 5 years. And people, the news blew it off about the debt credit rating. They blew it off, but I'm telling you, the rest of the world didn't blow it off, because it was a sign that our federal government is so corrupt and so unwilling to face the problems, so worried about being reelected, that they wouldn't fix the problems. Usually in my lifetime, every time we had an economic crash, there was always a kind of a correction point. You know, everybody kind of got sober and they made some adjustments, and then we moved back to production. This is the first time in my lifetime that we've never moved back to production. The only thing that's being produced right now is war and printing money and borrowing money. That's the only thing we're producing. We're not building anything. We're not encouraging anybody to build anything. We can't bring our corporations back to this country because they're scared to death of Obama and his policies and taxes and Obamacare and everything else. You know, we're not in a recovery mode. I don't care what these people tell you. You know, the stock market, the stock market is a joke. It's all monopoly money. I mean, when you're
it's
printing,
a casino.
It's just insane.
It's a rigged casino.
You know, the Fed has a $3.6 trillion balance sheet on us now.
That you know
That's
of.
The amount of money they printed, yeah, that we know of. That
yeah,
doesn't
that
even include
of.
The $15 trillion they shipped overseas. But when you look at all these factors, it is so important that you stand on principle, that you, as a citizen, get educated, get involved, and quit living your life in fear. I threw out probably potentially a pretty good chunk of negative there. But this country can recover so fast because America is a great country. And our system is a great system. But you have a lot of corruption. And that corruption can and we've been here before, maybe not to this extent, but this country's gone through, it went through the Civil War. You know what I mean? I mean, we've been through some crap, and we can survive
yep.
it. But people have got to quit reacting, quit letting the media and the Republican Party tell you, what's good, what's bad, and why we have to, roll over and be French Republicans one more time. And start understanding that. Yeah, if we don't stand on that Constitution, that Bill of Rights, then we are no longer exceptional. Because that's what makes us exceptional.
There it is. And Rand Paul wrote a great piece in Time Magazine, Chris. I'm glad you brought that up. He wrote a great piece in Time Magazine explaining why we're exceptional. He agreed with Putin on some of his points, because Putin brought up some valid points. But then he explained to him why we are exceptional. So instead of running around with your head cut off, like, the Fed and the IRS and the scandals and the wars and I don't know what to do.
Now what the fuck are we supposed to do? Where's the real pretty shit now, man?
Grab yourself up by the bootstraps and start behaving like the American that you are. It
Bingo.
Takes courage to be free. It takes bravery to be at liberty. If you want liberty, you have to defend it. And if you want liberty, you have to accept the concomitant responsibility. Liberty is not free. If you don't want responsibility, then suck up in the fetal position like Johnny Boehner. Let them feed you. Let them provide you with shelter. Let them provide you with your medical care. And let them kill you when they're done with you and you're no longer useful. And you won't have any responsibilities. That's what life is like in prison. But if you want to be free, you've got to accept the duty that comes with freedom. And part of that duty is participating. Participating in the process and understanding what it means to be an American. Look, in 2 days, it's the 17th of September. It's not a national holiday. No one's going to take off from work unless we have a government shutdown, but that's really not until October. There's not going to be any fanfare. It's not going to be mentioned on TV, not even on unfair and imbalanced and unmedicated Fox News. They're not going to do a little swoosh and a little dong and then, show you the big muscled guys and the big boob blondes and tell you all the great conservative stuff that you're just eating up when it's really all bullshit. They're not going to tell you about this. But September 17th, that's the day that the Constitution was ratified.
Yeah.
September 17th. It is as important as July 4th. What's July 4th? That's Independence Day. Everybody wishes everybody happy 4th. There's a 4th every month, but there's only one Independence Day. That's July 4th. And there's only one Constitution Day. That's September 17th. Pick it up. It's not that long. It's four pieces of parchment on 8x11 paper. It's about 18 pages. Pick it up and read it. We're going off the air in 90 seconds. If you want to listen live, call in right now, 646-649-1013. I can't take any calls, but you can continue to listen live. If you're in podcast or archive or MP3, we'll just keep rolling, trying to wrap this up. But pick up the Constitution, read it, understand what it means. And don't get confused by the words. General welfare in 1789 does not mean what the world welfare means in 2013. If you want to know what they meant by general welfare in the preamble, which isn't really law, it's kind of a vision statement, then pick up the Federalist and Anti-Federalist papers. They've explained everything to you. All these debates that we're having right now, they've been had. They've been done, and they've been settled. It was between the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists. And don't give me this bullshit about that was pre-industrial America, there were no nuclear weapons, it's all different now. It's not different. Human nature hasn't changed in 100,000 years. It's not going to change. Okay? We are what we are. We're all prone to corruption, which is why the Constitution was built. If we were angels, we wouldn't need government. But since men are not angels, we need government. And since men are not angels, that means that the men you're putting in government are likely to be corrupt and screw it up, or even if they're well-intentioned and good, they're likely to make mistakes or are prone to corruption, which is why the Constitution was designed the way that it was with checks and balances. Checks and balances means it doesn't work smoothly. It means that your House and your Senate should be fighting with each other. It means your House and your House should be fighting with each other. It means your Congress and your President should be fighting with each other because you don't want them to do anything fast. When they collude and they do bipartisan bullshit and get things done quickly, huge, massive bills go through, massive appropriations, and you get raped. That's what happens. When they fight, it slows the process down, it causes for negotiation, it causes for compromise, and nobody gets exactly what they want, but it costs less and it does less. And the fact is, nobody wants government to do more. If you want government to do more, go to a friggin' socialist or a communist country. Go to Cuba, for God's sake. In this country, we want the government to do less. There's 18 enumerated powers, and there's Article 9 that says specifically what they're not allowed to do, and the 10th Amendment says the powers not expressly given to the federal government are reserved to the states and the people. That is something that isn't a left-right thing. It's not a Democrat-Republican thing. It isn't any partisan thing. That is just an American thing. And if you don't agree with that, you're in the wrong country, because that's the law that we all agree to. So get to know it. Read the Constitution. And what Chris was talking about, this whole thing with the money. Man, we got plenty of money, and we're about to get plenty more money than we've ever imagined, especially if you allow them to fund Obamacare. There will be so much money. Now, that sounds good, right? Lots of money? No. When you increase the quantity of money, you devalue the value of money. And that's exactly what Ben Bernanke has been doing, to the tune of $85 billion a month. That's $1 trillion a year of fabricated money out of nothing, which reduces the value of the dollar by at least 7%, not to mention all the other crap that's messing it up. So when they tell you inflation is 2.3% and you get your 1.3% bump in your Social Security, your pension, your cost of living adjustment, that's bullshit, because the dollar just dropped by 12%. Oh, but no, it's rising. Sure, it's rising. It's not rising. It's just falling less fast than the yen. That's not rising. You know, you got to understand these things. Now, look, what we got coming up with this potential shutdown and people giving me this bullshit that you can't defund the law, you have to repeal it first. No, defund it. It's not going to get repealed. That's the next Congress, the next president can unravel this massive thing. Just defund it. Oh, but that's illegal. You can't not go through with it, really. Because what did Eric Holder, right, and Obama, what did they do about the Defense of Marriage Act, which is law? They decided not to prosecute it, right? What about his own landmark piece of legislation? How many exemptions? Yeah.
45 delays on Obamacare. That's illegal.
Right. Yeah. But they're doing it, you know. You're absolutely right. They delayed the Obama. How about the border fence? Was that ever built? I mean, that was passed as a law, right? They didn't build it. They didn't build all of it.
They defunded it.
Right? Yeah, they defunded it. So you know, now, is that right? I don't think so, but the fact is that they're doing it, so why not with this massive monstrosity? You know, of course you can defund the law before you repeat it, but see, the thing is, these assholes don't respect the law in the first place. I mean, think about this. Every single one of them, from Obama to Boehner to Cantnot to McConnell to Jihad Jane McCammon, Lindsey Grahamnesty, Lightning's Loafers, douchebag, they all took an oath before God to defend the Constitution of these United States from enemies foreign and domestic. And they've broken that oath. If they don't respect the supreme law of the land, you really expect them to follow any other statutory rules? So defund this thing. Tell them that that's what you want. And if it causes a government shutdown, so be it. That's Obama's fault. And frankly, maybe if it shuts down, nothing bad happens. You can keep it shut down.
Yeah,
you know,
no,
there's 50 other governments in this country. You know, the roads are going to work. The mail's still going to get delivered. The lights are still going to come on. There's still going to be food at the 7-Eleven in the grocery store.
Essential
so shut
services,
it down. Who cares?
Security.
Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and recently now we got more of those emails from Lois Lerner. We find out she did know about it. They did order targets of the Tea Party and conservative groups and Christian groups.
Oh, you know
it. They were hoping, you know, they said whatever we can't do, we hope the FEC can take care of it. So they were politicizing the Federal Elections Commission to do it too. Now, you might freak out and go, oh, this is just an overblown thing, and they targeted progressive groups too. No, they didn't, and it's not overblown. And for all you progressives out there, people who don't like the Tea Party and think that's fine that the Tea Party was targeted, what happens when the next asshole gets in power and has the IRS at his disposal and he's not your guy? See, that's how you have to think. If you give anybody the power, just because it's working out for you, because you did the wrong thing by supporting corrupt power simply because you happen to agree with the agenda of the current guy in charge, well, now that you've given him that power, what happens when the next guy gets it? The Republicans gave all this this unwarranted power to George Bush, and then Obama inherits it and makes it bigger, and now you start whining about it? You gave it to George Bush. Now the left wants to give even more power to Barack Obama, but what happens if you get another Bush, which, God willing, will never happen. But I'm just saying, it could, you know? So think about it. Don't give them power because they will wield it against you because none of them care for you. Obama doesn't care about you progressives, and the Rhino leadership doesn't care about you conservatives. So understand that and get people who do care and who will respond. So we got all these things with those emails. Larry Summers, it looks like, is backing away from becoming the Fed chairman, so this woman, Janet Yellen, is likely to become the next Fed chair. Why? Well, because she's a woman. So Obama's going to put her there because, you know, he's progressive and, you know, fair and all that kind of stuff. It really doesn't matter if it's Larry Summers, Janet Yellen, or, you know, Peter Rabbit. Because the Fed chairman does whatever the governor of the bank of the Federal Reserve Branch of New York tells him to do. And basically, it's working for the transnational bankers to pillage your country and send you to war on their behalf. That's what they do. If you don't understand that, then you don't know what's going on. That's exactly why our policies are so messed up in the first place. Okay? So you got to keep an eye on these things. We just had the fifth anniversary of the collapse of Lehman Brothers and the beginning of the, quote, Great Recession. And as Chris said earlier, you know, what recovery? Well, Chris, and you and I both talked about this before, but, you know, recovery is a word that's used in addiction. You know, addicts hit rock bottom. You know, they finally got too much stuff in their veins or too much coke up their nose. They finally realize, I'm fucked up and I can't stop doing drugs and I need help. And they reach out and ask for help. And that's when recovery begins. But see, you're addicted to that paper money because it's kept things going. It's floated, papered over all the problems that we have. The problem is,
first of all, people think it's money.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the first problem, is people actually think it's money. Oh, God, help us.
It's debt. Look at it. It says Federal Reserve note. It's not federal. There's no reserves. It's a note.
There's no gold that we know of.
Yeah.
There's no gold that
we know of. They took it. So, you know, so like an addict, you're addicted to this U.S. paper dollar because they've convinced you to get used to it, and you're addicted to the freebies government gives out. Well, there's nothing free. They steal it from you in the first place, and they steal it from all of you. Don't think for a minute they're getting it from the 1%. The 1%, that doesn't even exist. It's the 0.0001% that controls everything, and everybody else gets raped, especially the poor people. Inflation hits them the worst. It's the most insidious tax. There are no exemptions. There are no subsidies. It just rapes all of us, and that's exactly what the Federal Reserve does. It creates inflation. It creates debt. It rips you off. Most of these problems we have are because of that reason. And so you've really got to understand that. So read the Constitution, understand how the Federal Reserve works, and hold these rhinos to account. And the way that you do that is you understand the rules of the game. Public pressure is a very powerful tool. You want to end the Fed? You should end the Fed. It's not going to end until you have a Congress that has courage. People like Ted Cruz and Rand Paul and Justin Amash. Chris, you want to comment on any of that crap that I just spewed? And then I got a little six-minute video that kind of encapsulates what we're talking about with the Federal Reserve for people who may not understand how much of a problem and why it's the root cause of the corruption in Washington, D.C.
Well, that was what I was going to say, was we need to do a couple economic shows, you know, because I really don't think enough people understand, you know, what our economy is, why it's broken, and why we keep ending up in these situations, you know, every 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 years. I mean, it's just a cycle of corruption, And you know, you can get into all kinds of conspiracy theories, but, you know, it just seems like it doesn't matter how hard you work, you know, 5 years later, your value of your money is 20%, 10, 12, 15, 20% less, and you got to work harder. And it's a cycle of abuse, and people need to understand it, but you've got a clip, so that's good.
Yeah, hopefully when there's a quote slower week, we can do a show on the Federal Reserve and stuff. And we've done a few of them. If you go back in the archives, you can find some of them there. But you know, as long as Syria is on the table, which it is, as long as the continuing resolution is on the table, debt ceiling, the amnesty bill, the continuing resolution, the Patient Protection Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, Banner Care, whatever the fuck you want to call it, as long as that stuff's on the table, we're going to talk about this stuff. And this is what I want you to talk
about.
Well,
and NSA, we'd hardly even talk
about
that.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
There's stuff coming out every other day, except for, you know, you have to go to foreign media to get the answers.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's crazy.
You find out from foreign sources that your
government is spying on you. Yeah, your government is spying on you. You're right. That hasn't gone away. Snowden has turned down at least 3 media interviews because he doesn't want the focus to be on him. He wants the focus to be on what he exposed. And he knows if he gets interviewed, it's all about, you know, where's Snowden and what's he doing with Putin and all this kind of stuff. The fact is that, you know, if he's a spy, he's a real shitty spy because he got all this information and he told everybody and he didn't get paid. So, I mean, that's not a good spy. That's a whistleblower. But call your representative. You're the constituent of the representative. You call them. You straighten them out on the wars. You straighten them out on the Fed. You straighten them out on Obamacare. You straighten them out. And you don't have to go into a dissertation. The person answering the phone doesn't really care what your rationale is. The only thing they're tabulating is, are you yay or nay? No, I'm no on Syria. I'm yay on defunding Obamacare. I'm no on a continuing resolution unless it defunds Obamacare. You know, that kind of stuff. That's what you do. That's what you call them up and tell them. And call the big man on campus, number three in line, actually number two after the first guy, number two in line for the presidency, the guy who controls the purse strings. Well, that's actually the Federal Reserve, but the guy who actually controls the appropriations, one of the most powerful positions in the country, Speaker of the House. Unfortunately, that position wasn't given to a man like Newt Gingrich. It was given to a loser like Johnny Boehner. So call him and tell him how much of a loser he is. 202-225-0600. 202-225-0600. And call Eric Cantnot. He's the House Majority Leader, although he's really not the majority leader because he's the majority in the sense that the GOP has the majority, but he's in the minority. He's a red rhino. No more red lines, no more red rhinos, and tell these red rhinos to stop giving Obama green lights on his fucking red lines. Eric Cantnot, the man that Mark Levin appropriately called an idiot. His phone number is 202-225-2815. And while you're at it, give Justin Amash a call, Trey Gowdy, Mike Lee, Ted Cruz, Rand Paul. Tell them what a good job they're doing so that they know that they should be doing more of what they're doing, standing on principle, standing up for the Constitution, reducing the corruption and power of government, not getting us into unnecessary wars, being strong enough to protect us from Muslim jihadis who are, in fact, trying to kill us, curtailing the spending, and not bringing on a job-killing bill that professes to be a health care reform, medical free bullshit plan, when in fact all it is designed to do is curtail access to medicine and kill jobs. And that's not some kind of, you know, conservative right wing meme. That is a fact of what it does. And the truth is, free markets, free people. Command and control economies fail because you can't do the calculus, and it doesn't matter who's in charge, whether it's Republicans or Democrats, they can't do it right. All right? No more green lights on Obama's red lines. Call them and tell them. And here's 4.5 minutes, and we'll try to do a show on this. But you can look this information up. A good book is G. Edward Griffin's The Creature from Jekyll Island, The Case Against the Fed by Murray Rothbard. And actually, there's a lot of free resources about the Federal Reserve, even full books in PDF format. You don't have to pay a penny. Just go to Mises.org, the Ludwig von Mises Institute, Mises.org. Another good source is Acton.org, the Institution of Religion and Liberty. Okay? Two very important sources. Go there, study, learn about this, know how this works. You have to know the ways of your enemy if you're going to win this war. And for God's sake, on September 17th, read the U.S. Constitution. Here's a little snippet about the Fed. 4.5 minutes.
Our nation is in crisis. We face a systemic collapse of confidence in our economy and the value of our currency. The United States controls the world reserve currency, but right now we aren't being good stewards. Already, we're seeing nations around the world set up trade agreements to avoid using dollars. Some nations going as far as dumping U.S. treasuries. Spending is out of control, and there is no one to stop it. At the risk of losing a political fight, politicians in D.C. are steering the entire world into a fiat currency crisis. Many are buying gold to protect themselves, but what about a return to the gold standard? It certainly makes sense for those who are looking for safety. Central banks own the majority of the world's gold. In fact, central banks are net buyers of gold. Publicly, they hate gold, but behind the scenes, they are buying it to protect themselves from the very currencies they are in charge of. Gold as money is treated as an old idea, but it is fiat money that is an old idea that has been tried on every continent and has failed every time, always leading to an economic crisis and, in some cases, hyperinflation. America's founding fathers knew the dangers of paper money. That's why they described in Article 1 of the U.S. Constitution that no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender of payment of debt. Prior to the Continental Congress, under the Articles of Confederation, the government had the power to print. However, the U.S. Continental eventually experienced hyperinflation. America thrived during the gold and silver standards, a true free market where we had money that could not be distorted by new creation easily. Most economists will tell you that the U.S. severed its tie to gold because the gold standard didn't work. However, the reason Nixon severed the gold standard is because it worked so well. The gold standard forced the government to deal with its deficits and active devaluation of its currency, since foreigners could exchange dollars for gold. But instead of doing the responsible thing, Nixon chose to end the gold standard and take America on the path of permanent devaluation by funding our wars and entitlements with fiat currency. The Federal Reserve today controls the money supply and interest rates. But did you know that prior to the Federal Reserve, the money supply was determined by natural economic forces? With gold as money, the money supply was stable, and interest rates were determined by supply and demand for borrowing. Instead of sustainable growth, we now live in a world where the Federal Reserve can keep interest rates low and create disasters like the tech bubble, housing bubble, and current stock bubble we are seeing today. Since losing the gold standard, the purchasing power of the U.S. dollar versus gold has lost 98% of its value. The dollar versus oil is down 96%, and the dollar versus food is down between 70 to 80%. This type of devaluation is starting to cause some states to take matters into their own hands. Utah has already passed legislation to recognize gold and silver as legal tender. Already, a depository has been set up for customers to link a Visa debit card to their gold and silver holdings. At least 12 states have legal tender bills under consideration. The current monetary system is facing an economic collapse, and only you can fix it. We need to start restoring our nation to a free market economy, where competing currencies are legal and the Federal Reserve is abolished. The currency system is terminal. Inflation is being created and prices are starting to rise during a time of an economic downturn. This is all leading to a collapse in our global fiat currency system. The first nation to return to the gold standard or change their laws to allow competing currencies will lead the way to a thriving, sustainable recovery. Just as the founders started the Declaration of Independence with, "We the people," we need to demand from our Congress and President that we the people want honest money, not worthless paper currency created by the Federal Reserve that has an inherent value of zero. The waste, fraud, and abuse starts with an endless supply of money going into D.C. It is time to look to the money that helped the U.S. and Britain during the Industrial Revolution and kept our growth stable and inflation rate near zero.
That video is available on our photo for the promo for the show. Just click on that. It's in the comments. It's called the Fiat Money Endgame. It's also available in our group, Texan Rex's Liberty Militia.
And I have posted in Chris's group, Coalition of Freedom, all on Facebook. It is from Sound Money Campaign, and they have several other videos that are worth checking out. It explains things in a very nice encapsulated manner. I recommend you check it out, Sound Money Campaign. Just Google it and click on the link. That's the root of all our problems. It's the Federal Reserve. It has to end. It came online 100 years ago. Its charter is up for renewal. That's going to come up for Congress to talk about. But in the meantime, we've got the continuing resolution, the debt limit. All of this stuff is related. It is all of a piece. It is time to put a stop to this growing statism and go back to our roots, what made this country great, free markets, free people, and free competing money. Chris, we're way into overtime, and last time BTR cut us off. Sorry, folks, that last week's show was cut off a little early. You know, Blog Talk Radio is a shoestring technology. We pay to do this. We don't get paid to do it, and you're the only source of getting the word out there. So please share this show. Send out the links. Even after we broadcast, if you listen live, share the archive. Let people listen to it, download the MP3, share it, tweet it out, get it out there so that people can learn to put down their favorite pet issue and their favorite, you know, 2016 candidate. It's 2013, for God's sake. We might not make it to 2016 if we attack Syria and blow up the world. Quit focusing on that. Focus on right now, okay, and get along on broad, important principles, and then we can fight about all that stuff later, okay? We can fight about all that stuff later. Right now, just focus on the big things. So Chris, why don't we go ahead and bring it home? We'll go to you for final thoughts, and I'll close it out.
No, that was a great clip, and I'm glad that we're getting into the economics, because people just – I really believe the average person doesn't have a clue, and they just keep getting caught up in the news of the day or the crisis of the day or the left versus the right versus, you know, in between versus moderates versus this versus that, and it doesn't matter. You know, they are – and I talked about it earlier, is the corruption cycle. You know, it is just mind-boggling to think of what the cost to run the federal government is right now, and which even makes it even more mind-boggling that they're sticking their nose in places they shouldn't, you know, when they should be coming home and taking care of the country and working on these issues. For the last 4.5 years, you know, all I've heard is just crap out of these people in Congress. Nobody... A handful of people talk about reform, balanced budgets, economics, and then the rest of it is just showboating to keep everybody at each other's throat while they do what they want to do anyway. And really what it gets down to is the bottom line is economics. And until people get educated on this stuff and start to demand accountability in these areas, you know, it's just going to be the next thing and the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And that was a great clip. I appreciate that. I'm good.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I think, you know, it's important. You know, there's war. There's the continuing resolution. There's the Obamacare / BoehnerCare, the debt limit increase, Federal Reserve. You know, economics, you know, you have to understand basic economics. Economics is nothing more than the employment of the efficient employment of resources given scarcity. And what it really is about is your life. Okay. You know, money is not going to make you happy. It's not the be all end all. Wealth isn't going to make you happy. It's not the be all end all. But the very simple fact is that it is how we acquire the things that we need. Food, shelter, water, you know, you have to be at liberty to exercise economic freedom. You know, the word capitalism is bandied about, you know, Karl Marx came up with that word. It was supposed to be a pejorative. But the fact is every economic system is capitalist in that they distribute capital. The question is, how do you distribute capital? All right. In communism, the idea is that, you know, there is no private property. And we share all the capital and resources. It's bullshit. It doesn't work. It's just not within conformity of human nature, and it just causes laziness and chaos. You can't calculate anything. It causes shortages and overages, and it's just a disaster. It's never worked. Ask Putin, right? He lived through that. He was in the Soviet Union, and it doesn't work, and he's not re-implementing communism in Russia today.
You know, he's smart. He saw it, it doesn't work. What we have is what is called state capitalism. Same with the Chinese have, state capitalism. It's not free market capitalism. You as an individual are not free to do whatever it is that you want to do in the marketplace. You can only do those things which the government permits you to do. And that is another name for that is corporatism or corporativism or fascism. It doesn't matter what you call it. Those are just labels, just like conservative and liberal. These words are all perverted. But just understand the full meaning. Free markets are just free people engaging in voluntary exchange. That's what the Constitution guarantees us to have, and that's precisely what the Federal Reserve, the connected bankers, the assholes on Wall Street, and the assholes on Pennsylvania Avenue, both in the 1600 end and on the Capitol Hill end, don't want, because that way they can control the flow of money. They can send it to their special interests and enrich themselves at your expense. Free markets diffuse power, diffuse wealth. If you're the number one firm in any particular industry and you want to stay that way, but you're afraid of competition, what you do is use the government to regulate everybody else out of business and keep you at the top. That's what corporatists do. It's not freedom. It's state capitalism. And the Federal Reserve has to be ended and the IRS has to be abolished. That's not going to happen until you have actual conservatives. And the way the conservatives are going to retake the Republican Party and hopefully the Democrat Party. You know, the Democrat Party and the Republican Party both used to be conservative. In 1924, both parties ran conservative presidential candidates. Hasn't happened since, okay? But if you want to do that, then the defunding of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act is the single best way right now to box in the red rhinos and to embolden the real conservatives and send reinforcements in 2014. It will be an electoral victory. Newt Gingrich proved that. When the Republican Party fights on principle for conservative values and the Constitution, remember, conservatism, authentic real conservatism, is seeking to conserve the timeless principles we enshrine in the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution. That's authentic conservatism. And that's what we're moving back towards. The wind is at our back.
You mean
this
classical
is the time to strike.
Liberalism?
Classical liberalism, exactly. This is the time to strike. This is the time to make it happen. And the way you make it happen is defund Obamacare. We're going to bring you another show this Thursday at 10 p.m. Remember, broadcast our regular broadcast time, 10 p.m. on Sundays, and we will have another show next week. But this Thursday we're doing part three of the conservative comeback, obliterating Obamacare. Check out the first two parts and send them out to people. I keep posting links with both of the shows, and I'll do another one with the third show attached. Please, if you see it and you like it, hit the share button too. Tweet it out and post it outside of Facebook. Post it on GretaWire. Post it on the Washington Post. Post it on the Huffington Post. Post it on the NRA website. Post it on REI Sports. Post it on Bass Pro Shops. Post it everywhere. Get it out there so people will hear this message and understand how bad the Federal Reserve is and how good it is to actually have constitutionalists in the government. Reign in its corruption and power so that you can be free. It's very, very, very vitally important. And now is the time to do it. We are about to experience a shitstorm like you've never seen, an economic collapse, which we're in the midst of. We're not in a recovery. We are in a slow economic collapse. Newt Gingrich said it clearly. If you don't elect a conservative candidate, and you had a whole host of choices, chiefly Dr. Ron Paul and Speaker Newt Gingrich, in either one of those choices, and we wouldn't be in the mess we're in. We wouldn't have the foreign policy disaster created by Kerry and Obama. Putin wouldn't be emboldened against the United States right now. We probably wouldn't even have a problem in Syria because we wouldn't have been sending arms over to al-Qaeda, and Assad would have already won, and things would be quelled over there. It didn't happen, and it wasn't going to happen if you elected Willard dipshit Mitt Romney. Okay, so it didn't happen, but we had those options. It could have happened, but Newt clearly said it. He said that if you don't elect a conservative, you will simply get someone to manage the decline.
Mm-hmm.
The Republicans wanted Romney to be the one to manage the decline. The Democrats wanted Obama. Well, Obama is managing your decline. And the only way to stop it is to repeal and replace the red rhinos. And the way you repeal and replace the red rhinos is don't fund Obamacare. It'll be an electoral victory. When Newt did it in 95, the Republicans were reelected to a majority. People liked the fact that they were fighting on principle. It can be done again. You just have to go over Boehner and Cantnot and McCarthy and McConnell. Call them, call them, call them. Boehner's phone number is 202-225-0600, and Eric Idiot Cantnot is 202-225-2815. Call them, keep calling them, keep signing Ted Cruz and Mike Lee's petition, www.don'tfundit.com. Tune in on Thursday. We're going to do part three of Obliterating Obamacare. Come back next Sunday. Get this information out there. On this coming September 17th, pick up a copy of the U.S. Constitution and read it. It's a wonderful document. It is a framework that diffuses power and binds down the government. Understand what it means. Read something from James Madison, a commentary on the Constitution, or Judge Joseph Story. Really learn what it means to be an American, because it is a privilege. There are 7 billion people currently alive on this planet. 300 million of us are blessed to be Americans. And with that blessing comes a duty. You have to stand up and take responsibility for liberty, because liberty and tyranny are always at odds and always will be. And if you want the devil to win, give in, become a slave of the Federal Reserve and its political tools in Washington. But if you want liberty to win, take the responsibility to take action. Posting crap about Obama on Facebook or yelling at your television isn't the kind of action that matters. Signing Ted Cruz and Mike Lee's petition, calling John Boehner, working to get real conservatives in both parties elected to office and holding them accountable, getting this show out there to people, getting people to tune in to Christopher Green at Alternative Media Television or Josh Tolley or Ben Swan. All right? Go to Mises.org, go to the Acton.org, and start learning and start spreading the news and start getting people to work together. And you don't have to agree on everything. If we agree on no war in Syria, we don't have to agree on the health care bill. If we agree on the health care bill, we don't have to agree on whether you're pro-life or not pro-life. Just work on the things you agree on to roll back this tide of statism. Now's the time to do it. Be proud to be an American. Stand up and be counted. And when the skies turn red, be quick or be dead. There's not much time, but the wind is at our backs for liberty. God bless the U.S. Constitution and God bless America. You are the one who's going to be the instrument of that blessing if you get off your couch and do something to defend your country and bring liberty back. This is Tex and Trog signing off.
And as Tex says, the flames of liberty never die.
misbehave.